Here we go. Take two. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, November 24th, 2019. Happy Thanksgiving week. I've been away for a couple weeks because I've been busy trying to be a fully fledged human, but nobody cares about that. But I do have a super special return guest. You know him. You love him. Seattle-based film critic, Mr. Tim Hall. How the hell are you, man?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me back. I always appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I had to... I bugged you after I saw Waves. I called you...
You didn't bug me.
I called you at, like, 1 in the morning Eastern Standard Time, and I was like, dude, can I just call you? and we talked about that, and I had to get some things off my chest. And we're going to get to that review. It looks like you've seen Knives Out, and Waves. So maybe we'll dedicate the latter half of our conversation with those two movies. And I will say that we will spoil them. So if you get to the point where we start talking about these movies, just know that we're going to spoil them. And that's what's going to happen. But for now, Tim, what the hell's going on with you since the last time you were on?
Not a whole lot. A lot of the same. But it's obviously, you know, a war season. So
yes,
I'm getting flooded with movies.
Right.
I just got a package yesterday that had Rocket Man, and, Hustlers, and Peanut Butter Falcon.
Uh-huh.
Just got a bunch of stuff. So
you even did
it's one of those.
You did an unboxing of The Marriage Story. That was a pretty intense screener.
Yeah. Every year we get something like that from some studio. Last year it was like this really cool book for Roma. The year before that, Get Out had a really nice art book. I guess there's one for us that I haven't gotten yet.
Okay.
So every year some studio does something very elaborate and interesting. And I don't know what I'm going to do with it. It looks cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool. I got a chainsaw last year for this movie. They sent me an actual chainsaw.
Wow.
So, yeah, you get the weirdest stuff. And I get really cool stuff, too. But sometimes you get stuff. I'm like, this is really dope. Not sure what I'm going to do with it, though, now that I have it in my house.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. A chainsaw. Do you remember what movie it was for?
Some Adam Driver movie. I forgot it. I forgot the name of the movie. But it was, it was weird.
Okay.
I was like, what is this gigantic box on my door?
Yeah. And it's
chainsaw.
And you got you did an unboxing for Marriage Story, and it was like this big box with like, I guess maybe like
two
photo books and.
Yeah.
That's
and they're heavy. It's like two books in one. They've got these love letters in them, and one is for Scarlett Johansson's character, the other is for Adam Driver, and they've got dope photos and parts of the script in it. And yeah, it's really cool.
Watched it yet, the film yet?
No, I need to watch it.
Yeah, it's coming. I think it's like December 6th or something. When is that coming out?
I think you're right.
Because
We have to vote. So I need to watch before we nominate and vote for our Critics Society. So I need to get on that.
How do you feel about, is there any difference for you and like your colleagues when it comes to a movie like Marriage Story and The Irishman, the films are going to be kind of their home's going to be on Netflix, but they're doing these limited releases. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I don't care, but I mean, it's been a conversation. There are people in our society who firmly believe that films must be seen in theaters and they have this very old school approach to it. For me, I don't care. And the dirty secret is for a lot of us, we end up watching this stuff at home because we get screeners for it.
Mm.
So all of this sort of hand-wringing about what needs to be seen in theaters and that's how you should see it. Most of us are seeing these films like it's such a busy season. We all have lives outside of film criticism that there will be screenings you miss. There'll be stuff that you didn't get to see. There'll be screenings set during your actual, work hours that you may or may not get to. And so you're the next chance to watch it is if you get sent to screener, whether it be digitally or physically, and you're gonna watch on a laptop or you're gonna watch it on your smart TV.
Right. Yeah.
That's what happens a lot of the time. So I don't care if people complain about, oh, The Irishman's on Netflix. Okay. Go see it in the theater if you feel like you need to, but
yeah,
or watch it at home.
I've had some friends that have seen The Irishman already, and they say, you know, it's a really good movie. My only thing is just like, I'm such a nerd when it comes to that whole theatrical experience. I don't like to go to the bathroom.
You don't want to miss anything.
I don't want to miss anything. Don't want to close my eyes. You know what I mean? So I just, I'm kind of like a nerd about that. And then I'm think this movie's possibly 3.5 hours?
Yeah, it's a long one.
And I don't want to, I didn't feel the time with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I didn't feel it too much.
Yeah, because if it's paced well, I mean, there are 90-minute movies that feel like they're 3 hours because it's paced so poorly, and you're just sitting there like, man, when is this over?
Yeah.
But the other crazy part is we don't really get the theater experience. Like, I'm with you. I enjoy the experience.
Yes.
And oftentimes, we're watching Infinity War, and it's 30 of us in the theater.
Yeah.
And that's not a true experience. My real theater experience was that Thursday when I saw it, and it was packed, and people went nuts. Like, those experiences, we rarely get those. And we get them for some of the bigger movies when, like, the public shows up, but for most of the smaller ones?
Yeah.
No.
I battle with this, and I have this internal struggle about being, like, super reclusive, and I don't like going to the movies with a lot of people. Like, I saw Knives Out, it was actually, we'll get to it, but I actually had, it was a fun experience. With a packed crowd and at that advanced screening. But at the same time, it's just like any other time I would prefer like the 4 o'clock screening, the 11:30, you know, like if I had my druthers, it would be, you know, that 10:30, 11 o'clock screening with not that many people in there. But I
do that sometimes too.
Yeah. And I have found that some of my best experiences have been in the big theater where you get a big laugh and all that stuff. But yeah, I kind of oscillate between those two experiences where it's just like, when I went to see Knives Out, the lady next to me took her shoes off.
Oh, wow.
And
that's disgusting.
Yeah, I was like, okay, lady, come on, really?
Yeah, it's not, get comfortable, but don't get too comfortable.
Yeah.
one of my favorite movie experiences was Emerald City Comic Con, which is this big comic convention here in Seattle every year, and it draws, you know, hundreds of thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like a long break in between. They had these big panels, right?
Yeah.
So the big break in between panels, it was like a 3-hour break between like panels people wanted to see. And so a group of us went over across the street to this movie theater to watch the first Raid Redemption movie.
Okay.
The first one.
Yeah.
And it was packed full of a bunch of us nerds, because everyone was wearing their little lanyards with their badges on them. We were like 90% of the theater.
Yeah.
And it was, and we, you know, packed, it was almost sold out, and we watched this crazy action film, and it was super loud and interactive and funny and engaging. And I was like, man, this was a lot of fun. I wish most of my movie experiences were like this, where it was like the target audience is packed in here watching this crazy martial arts film.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of like wow moments.
Yeah, some of those are really good. I think it's just me being a you know, I still appreciate that theatrical experience. I mean, so the last couple movies, so it was, I saw Knives Out and I saw A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood on Thursday, this past Thursday, and it was at the Alamo Draft House in Yonkers. And I ordered a burger and a salad because I've given up French fries. I'm going to try to do...
You gave them up.
Yeah, I'm trying to be like how Bill Burr did a whole calendar year without drinking. I'm going to do one. Like, that's his big vice. And my vice is like fast food. So I need to at least start with like knocking out the French fries. And...
And good luck, man. Yeah.
it's been about 3 weeks. I went to Fuddruckers on Friday, and I had a side salad with my burger. That was one of the hardest things I ever had to do.
I could imagine. He said, "You want a what now?" You're like, "Give me the salad."
They said, "We have side salads." I was like, "Okay, all right. It's actually pretty good."
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to wean off the, you know.
You feel better for it.
Yeah, I'm almost 40. I'll be 40 in about 2 or 3 months. So
yeah,
trying to switch it up.
And that's the one thing I think you're speaking to is like the comfort. When you're older, you just kind of want comfort.
Yeah.
You just over everything. My friends were in this group chat the other day, and they were talking about taking a trip, taking a guy's trip, which mm-hmm. who knows what's going to happen because, you know, people don't fall through. And
yeah.
They were choosing between, do they want to go to New Orleans? Do they want to go to Toronto, Canada? And they were like, let's go to New Orleans. And what about if we went down there and we did this, this, and this, and we went to Essence Festival? And I was like, way too many people at Essence Festival.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you go to crowded movie theaters, and you're concerned about Essence. And I was like, I don't want to be waiting in line for food.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the first mind went to, I'm going to be hungry, and I'm going to go to a restaurant, and it's going to be like a 2-hour wait.
Right.
That's not fun for me. Maybe yeah. when I was 20, that was like a fun thing. But that's not fun for me.
Because New Orleans is kind of like one of those convention towns, like yeah. Indianapolis. And I, you know, dude, like that Mr. Rogers screening, it was like 4:30. There were people there, but it wasn't too crowded. You can't look at your cell phone. And
yeah.
And when I went to go see Knives Out on Friday night, it was a 7 o'clock screening. This dude kept pulling out his cell phone, and I wanted to like just snatch the phone and throw it. You know, it's like
annoying.
I hate that shit. So it's almost like I understand. Like I can on a given night, like when I go see a movie, I can watch a movie in the theater, come home, and then fire up something on demand or Prime or something like that, and still enjoy it. But to me, it's nothing like that theatrical experience. You know,
the phone thing is crazy because there's really nothing happening on your phone right now.
Right,
I don't know why you're looking at it.
Yeah,
like what is like? It's like a reflex of people just to pull out their phone and check whatever. You're not checking the time. You're
yeah
checking for notifications, and it's like just turn it off. I turn my phone off and I put it away. I either put it in my pocket, my jacket pocket, or if I'm carrying like a bag, I put it in my bag, mm-hmm. and I don't have it on my person.
Yeah,
so I can reach for it. But yeah. at our screenings, we have like security who are specifically looking for people with their phones out.
Yeah, that's what they do at those GoFobo screenings. I don't do those yeah. anymore. I don't care for that anymore. Those things.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. I don't know how people do it. It's a lot.
I'm trying to think of the last thing that I saw. It might have been Glass. It was actually Glass because I was mm-hmm. really psyched. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, they try to make you sit in certain spots. I was like, no, I want to sit here. It's not reserved yeah. for anybody. So I would like to sit. I would like to sit here. You know, I'm not that much of an asshole where it's like I'm going to sit in somewhere that's reserved. I'll sit on this end. It's just too much, yeah. man.
It can be a lot, man. I yeah. understand why people's hesitancy to do that because it can be a lot. I mean, the people who run our screenings here are great, and mm-hmm. they do a really good job, and they're really good with the public. It's mostly the public that's a problem.
Yeah, I can imagine.
We have our regulars who show up, and then we got these people who just are out of control, bonkers.
Because I don't know.
This one black dude who's a Trump supporter who shows up and he's covered like full Trump gear.
What? To a movie?
And try to engage me in conversation.
Ugh.
He kept trying to engage me in conversation about, this is before the election.
Okay.
And he kept like pressing me and I was like, bro, we're not having this conversation. Because when I first saw him with the shirt on, I laughed. I was like, he got a Trump shirt on. Like, I thought he was being ironic.
Yeah.
No, he was all in. And then one day, it was just me and him, and I said, all right, we're going to have this conversation. Keep trying to engage. And, of course, he stuck to these really basic, bizarre talking points that didn't really make any sense. And
yeah.
I was just sort of like, no, well, that's not true. That's wrong. That's a lie. And I was like, I was honest with him. I said, man, they don't care about you, bro. Like, you got to know that. Like, I hope you know that moving forward. You can do all this, like, you know, soft shoeing for these people, but they don't care about you.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't care about you. You take off that hat and that shirt, you want to, so you might want to relax.
They still hate you.
They still hate you.
Yeah.
So, you know, but then I'll never forget this after the election when Trump won. I think sometimes people forget, but after the election, it was a really weird feeling in the country. For me, at least in the city, people were just sort of in a daze, like, man, this really happened. And so we had a screening, and I'm with my friend, who stepped away, and I'm with her daughter, and I've been like her uncle since she was born.
Okay.
So she's holding my hand, and we're standing in line at concession, and she's, you know, doing the thing that kids do. She had to been, she's 11 now, so she had to been like six, seven?
Sure, yeah.
So she's talking to me about something, and then this dude walks up, and he's like in my face, like, I told you we'd win. I told you, like, real, like, shit talking. And I was so glad I was holding this little girl's hand because she really kept me calm. She sort of, like, looked at me and was like, who is this guy?
Like, wow.
And I was just like, all right, man. And it kind of kept it moving. But, yeah, man, he got real aggressive with me. And I was like, all right, dude.
It was a white dude?
Nah, same black dude.
Oh, the same guy? Oh, shit. He's doing a victory lap.
Yeah, touchdown wow. dancing in my face.
That's crazy.
And I was like, all right, man. All right.
That's weird.
He's in that job. Yeah.
Well, what have you, I know it's still early, but it's,
yeah.
What have you liked? If you could give me at least your top five so far.
That's tough.
I know.
Loose. Obviously, I love Loose. Waves.
Are you saying Loose at five and Waves at four?
I don't know if I'm ranking them yet.
Okay. Fair enough.
Loose, Waves. I really enjoy Knives Out.
Yeah.
I might make it. I really like that.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Us. I really liked Us.
Wow. Okay. I did too, but it's up there. It's up there on your list then, your tentative list.
Man, I don't know what would be that fifth slot. I feel like there's something I'm forgetting.
Did you like Last Black Man in San Francisco?
I have not watched it yet.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I haven't. It's literally sitting right in front of me right now.
Okay.
It's on my list over Thanksgiving weekend to knock those out.
Yeah.
That and a couple other ones. I haven't seen yet.
I still want to see it again. I own it, you know. I just want to see it again. And I think it'll, well, there's, that movie's kind of been in the conversation now, a little more now since Waves came out.
Right.
Because of the black movie with white director thing.
Right.
Yeah. What about Parasite?
Probably, yeah. I really enjoyed Endgame.
Okay, you got the little the mainstream appeal in there.
That was like a fun. It was like a fun experience.
Yeah.
It was like a really, and surprisingly, a lot more emotional than I had anticipated. I did not go in expecting that. The sort of level of emotion and saying goodbye to these characters and how the ways in which they tied everything together.
Mm-hmm. They, like, did stick the landing. Yeah, they stuck the landing on that.
That is hard to do with 10 years of filmmaking and, you know, over a dozen films and characters, mm-hmm. and storylines and cool callbacks and the you know, coming full circle with Tony and Cap. And that was beautiful.
Yeah, that's one thing that I would have to, like, do you, I mean, a lot of people seem to have issue with Martin Scorsese when he said what he said, but you got to think about those movies are basically keeping the industry alive, you know, as far as like the theaters are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Nerds like us, I mean, I don't think you very seldom pay for a ticket, do you?
Here's the thing. Those are the movies that I will go pay for.
Yeah.
Even if I've seen them. I will be like, oh, I'm seeing that again. And I'll go opening night or I'll go that weekend.
Yeah, it seems like, because for me, I mean, most people, like one of my coworkers, he's a family man. He's got a wife and two kids. He's like, yeah, you know, I only really go out with my family when it's time for these superhero movies.
Yeah.
You know, he said, like, occasionally I'll sneak off and after work and go see something that I want to see. But really, it's just it's these superhero movies that people go to.
I mean, we're different because we can sit through something like Waves. It's emotionally draining, and you walk out feeling like you got beat up.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh man, why? Or some crazy Holocaust movie. You're just like, man, that was depressing.
Right.
But most people want to go see something that's going to leave them feeling good and fun and excited when it's over and feel encouraged.
Yeah.
And that's why these Disney Pixar movies last and have such a long run, because people like that feeling.
Right.
And that's why after Infinity War, so many people called me and asked me what the hell was going on. I had people calling me leaving the theater, be like, you need to tell me what's happening. Most of them were black and they were upset when T'Challa disappeared. Of course they're going to kill the black man. I was like,
yo, Tim, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I had a lot of them phone calls, man. I was like, that is good. It has to. The second half of the story coming up. Everyone's coming back. Like,
what is we going to do?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
They gonna kill him?
Damn.
No, not Black Panther.
Like, oh, my God.
But also, it leads to that move, that moment in Endgame when he comes. Of course, he's first walking out them circles.
Yeah. That was
People
awesome.
Went nuts.
On your
People
left.
Went bananas. Yeah, that on your left. Man, why did that make me so emotional? That on your left?
Bro, I did not cry. You know, if I cry, I would tell you and everybody else, but I did get a good feeling about, like, that. That was everything.
I was like, oh, no, they finna kill Cap.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there like, that's my guy. They finna, he finally, Cap's gonna go out. It's him.
Yeah.
And against Thanos and his army, it's going to be, you know, he's going to go down in the hail of bullets. And my homegirl, Jessica, was like, where's everybody else? She like whispered to her, where's everybody else? And then that's when the circle opened up.
Yeah.
And the way they set it up, like, he couldn't really hear what was happening. He's like, Sam, it's Sam, can you hear me? He's like, on your left. And the circles open up and that swelling music and everybody, all the Avengers come out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was the shit.
That's good filmmaking.
Yeah, I don't get it, Marty.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. That's that get off my lawn kind of attitude about what was. It's like when you hear old rappers complain about new rappers, or people say there's no good new hip hop music. Well, that's a lie.
Yeah. It's like,
there's
dude,
a lot of really good hip-hop
it's
music.
Like, dude, we still like you. You know, like the Joker, like, was basically a ripoff of the King of Comedy and fucking Taxi Driver. So it's like, they made your movie, dude.
Yeah.
You know. So I don't know, man. It's that, and that stayed in the news that had a long cycle to it.
But that's the cycle of everything, right? Where Iron Man comes out, and there's a section of people who really like Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
There's a section of us who really understood, you know, Nick Fury showing up at the end.
Yeah.
We got what that meant.
Right.
So then we get these other movies, and then we finally get to Avengers, and Avengers is gangbusters, and there are a section of us who knew who Thanos was at the end, who were, like, really hyped up about it. But, you know, when it started to become popular culture, now it's popular, and then it becomes a thing that's popular.
Yeah.
Then it becomes the thing that you can now, and you see it, and it's the sad part of where we're at, where you can generate money on your YouTube, you can generate money on your blog, or get retweets when you do a stupid thread about why Captain Marvel sucks and it's pushing feminism on us and what's wrong with superhero movies and how they're ruining the industry. You can take whatever metrics you want and frame it in a way that makes it look like it's ruining the industry. But the truth is, people have access to other things to watch at home.
Mm-hmm.
Movies are expensive. That's connected to people just not having enough expendable income to spend on things like going to the movies or shopping at malls or, you know, doing these things that we see industry sort of fading.
Yeah, and it's like...
But the industry's healthy.
And it's so funny because, like, Captain Marvel made, like, over $1 billion. In the U.S., you have all these people complain. You don't have all these people. You have 150 people complaining. And every time I go to these screenings, every time I go to the theater to see one of these big movies, it's mainly dudes and it's mainly dudes and a couple dudes that take their girlfriend if they're lucky to have one. And they're going to see all these movies. The people bitch and complain about Star Wars, about Rey, about that Asian chick. You could barely get tickets for opening day.
They were sold out quickly.
Yeah, and even Rod was like, all y'all motherfuckers complaining about these chicks and all this shit. How come Fandango's messed up? How come it crashed?
How come I can't get in the system?
Yeah, fuck that.
I was telling my homeboy that, so my homeboy called me one day. I love him to death, man.
Yeah.
Love my homie. But he calls me because he fell down this YouTube rabbit hole about like Star Wars and canceling Kennedy and how she was going to get let go. And I was like, well, that's just some internet stuff. In real life, they just re-upped their contract.
Yeah.
And so he was talking about they're losing core fans, and it's this culture war. I said, it's not a culture war because these people are going to see it anyway.
Yeah.
They're just complaining.
Right.
It's not a culture. They're going to go see it. I said, listen, I said, come with me to Comic-Con. And here's, I don't care what people say on the internet. What I do know is when I show up at these screenings, they're packed. When I go, because Cinerama is one of the biggest theaters here. It's like hella nice theater. When I go online to buy tickets, it'll show you how many seats are sold.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are sold out. When I show up at Comic-Con, there's these little girls and boys and adults dressed as these characters. They're selling artwork with these characters. They're buying merchandise for these characters. So I don't know how it's failing. Like I struggle to see where these things are failing and how the quote-unquote core audience isn't it. I always tell the story because I was with my homegirl, the same little girl that stopped me from choking that dude at the screen. We were watching Force Awakens, and I had already seen Force Awakens. I'd already seen the movie. I know what happened. It's the scene where Rey gets the lightsaber.
Yeah.
So I turn to look at her, and she like set up. She was ready. So after the movie, we're walking out. She's like, I'm going to be Rey for Halloween, and you're going to dress up as Finn. And she's like, you know, how kids tell you what you're going to do. She's telling me what I'm going to do for Halloween, and this is what's going to happen. But it reminded me that, like, that Star Wars, it isn't about my love for A New Hope or me playing with my friends' Star Wars when I was a kid.
Yeah.
There's a part of this film that's for her.
Mm-hmm.
She's seven, and it's her first Star Wars experience, and that Rey character is for her.
Right.
It's for that generation of people, and now she's someone who wants to see Star Wars, who's going to see the new Star Wars movie, who Rey is a hero to her the way Han Solo was a hero to me, or I love Luke.
Right.
Or Chewie. Like, it's the same. It just passes on to a different generation. And it may not look like me. It may not dress like me, but it's for them. And that's okay. Like,
yeah, it's fine. It's like that Freddie Prinze Jr. rant that he did on that podcast.
Oh, I saw that.
That's been going around. It's kids. It's for kids.
It's for kids. It's never not been for kids.
Yeah.
My uncle and his friends complaining about the Ewoks. I remember that.
Oh,
they hated the Ewoks.
Yeah.
But they were older, and they were like, what is this? What are these little... But it was to sell toys, and guess who loved the Ewoks? Me.
Yeah, right.
I love the Ewoks. I still see people dressed as Ewoks at these Comic-Cons, man. These people, full-fledged Ewok, hot-ass Ewok costumes walking around in the sun.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's funny because I think we believe things live a certain way because we see them on the internet, but outside of that digital space, man, it's really not the truth.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's like in real life, it's that theater's going to be... I got my ticket to see it in Dolby on that Thursday, and then I'm going to see it at Alamo on Friday, and I ordered two collector's glasses.
Yeah.
A dark side and a light, whatever the light side, whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah, but and that's the thing. I mean, it was all this hand-wringing about Disney Plus, and everybody has it, and the numbers are crazy, and everybody's watching them.
Yeah,
of course.
I don't have it yet. I'm gonna get it, but I don't have it yet.
Yeah, The Mandalorian is good. It's good stuff.
I want to. That's the only reason I really want to see it because of that. Like, I want Disney Plus. Otherwise, like, I get the. I didn't know people were gonna go that ape shit over the nostalgia trip. That was impressive.
It's a lot. I was watching the X-Men cartoon, so it's funny to watch now as an adult. But even then, like, I think I'm really looking forward to their other new content. They're doing that Falcon and the Winter Soldier show that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Right.
So I'm excited to see that.
What do you think about them releasing these new shows, the new content on a week-to-week basis?
It's fine. I think we're so used to like Netflix is sort of like here's everything at once.
Yeah,
and you can show through it, but I think it allows them more content. It keeps the show in a conversation, if it's good in a conversation for a longer period of time,
right,
then like 2 weeks of like Stranger Things gets be in the cultural conversation for 2 weeks, then people stop watching it and they moved on to something else. So
yeah,
we've been talking about The Mandalorian since the release, and we'll keep talking about it until done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 8 weeks. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Versus the two. So I understand why, from a marketing standpoint, why you would do that, to keep the buzz going for your new product, but you know.
Yeah.
But also, if you're someone who needs, like Kenden, my friend Kenden, if he really enjoys binging things, he's just going to wait. Same with Watchmen. There are people who are just going to wait and watch Watchmen in one full swoop.
That's kind of what I'm doing with HBO. Plus Disney Plus and yeah, Apple TV Plus, because I like the morning show. I know people were.
I need to watch that.
I did like a seven day free trial, and mm-hmm, I enjoyed it. I like those big time actors chewing scenery. You know,
yeah, I got my boo Jamina in there. I love her. I want to see her.
It's got Gugu and Botha-Raw. I mean.
I forgot Gugu was in there. Yeah,
oh my god!
Two of my boobs in Gugu. She's so gorgeous. I was just watching that stupid Tom Hanks movie she was in. It's the first time I saw her.
What's the movie?
It's
where he works at Walmart or something.
Yeah, and he gets like fired and goes back to school.
Yeah,
she's so fine in that movie. I forgot she was in it, and I was watching it, and I was like, I did see this movie, and then she showed up. I was like, oh, that's when I first saw her. It was in that movie.
I just rewatched Fast Color.
Is it on Netflix now?
Well, I got it on Blu-ray. I think it's, I mean, I'm a stan. I'm obsessed. But I got that. I just watched it with the director's commentary, but I'll probably rewatch it at another point.
Those director commentaries are really interesting.
Yeah, I used to be really into them when DVDs first came out, and I'd watch like Election so many times. I'd watch I watched Malcolm X when Spike Lee did it was like an anniversary edition where he did commentary on that, nerded out on that stuff.
Yeah, like Vanity Fair does those like directors breaking down scenes.
Yeah,
you watch those videos; those are great.
The last one I saw was the director of Parasite talking about
it.
Yeah,
yeah, those are really good.
I don't know. Like you and I were talking the last week about. We were talking about how like people were trying to make fun of, well, they were making fun of the actors on Actors, but I love those, man.
Oh, I love them, man.
Yeah,
this is my favorite time of the year. Those videos, I haven't seen any of the videos pop up yet.
See, what Chopped Up or just?
No, I haven't seen them. I haven't seen any of them sort of pop up on my YouTube yet in those videos.
They're up there. They're the latest one. I mean, they had Awkwafina and Taron Egerton. They have Cynthia Erivo and Alfre Woodard, I think.
Oh yeah, I did. That's right. I saw that clip of them talking, and Alfre Woodard was talking about black people doing it.
Yeah, you can't play some hoochie mama number one and then try to play like and get mad when you don't get like. It's a super serious part or whatever. Yeah.
You should be able to do both. Chris Rock always talks about playing that character and I'm going to get you, sucker. And that's the thing that people always talk about.
Yeah.
I'm in the movie for like 25 seconds.
Yeah.
But that's the scene. Like, it seems inconsequential, but he killed like a very small role.
Right. Yeah. That's, I mean, when you get the opportunity to eat, then you just try to eat. I remember, I did a weekend or I did like a, I think I did a night opening for Jeremy Piven last year. And, he was like, yeah, you know, you just ad lib, you just make shit up and they'll give you more stuff. I was like, yeah, maybe for you, but I just got
what's my man? Lewis Riddick. Is that his name? The dude,
on
The Wire.
I know you're talking about Lance Reddick.
Not Lewis Riddick. Lance Reddick. Lewis Riddick is a football player. Lance Reddick was saying he was in one of these clips and he was talking about these white dudes complaining on a set about like how they almost got the lead. He was like, almost. Yeah. Like, I've never had to get an audition to be a lead in anything.
Yeah, that's
rare. And you're talking about how you almost got the lead in a couple parts. And that you're so upset about it. He was like, come on, man.
I like that podcast. It's actually really good. bear with me a second. I'm going through my off camera with Sam Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked to him for about an hour, and it was good. Yeah, he was talking about his story and everything. It takes a while for some people. For some people, shit,
it takes a minute.
I didn't get my SAG card till I was 37, and that was two years ago. So it's just it's a testament of just like sticking to it. And.
And it's hard, man. And all those no's is tough.
Yeah.
So to get back up after a no and put that same energy and joy and love into it and try it again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard.
It makes it more tangible when you hear other people talk about. I think it just never gets old for me. You know, I enjoy listening to that, like, podcast and stuff like that. And, like, you mentioned Knuckleheads.
I love that podcast.
With Darius Miles and Quentin Richardson. I like that. He's like,
that's funny.
Who's the first person to bust your ass?
That's always the baby one.
I didn't realize that was 2008 was his first year. I didn't realize he was that young.
What I love that this show gives is, you know, it's just players talking to players.
Uh-huh.
When Q Rich was talking about Big Baby saying, getting upset they didn't do Secret Santa.
Yeah,
I was at my desk in tears. He was such an honest.
Yeah,
he's like, that's why we're not gonna win. Like, he was so mad.
Mm-hmm. And he was right. Like, that's real shit.
Right.
Like, we not thing. No team, and that's real shit. Yeah. That's a part of
we're
it.
Not a team.
Yeah,
it's a part of it. It was funny. I mean, it was funny. Also, that up all the smoke with that's good too. They had Lou Williams on there, and mm-hmm. he was really. You saw the clip of him talking about, like, almost getting robbed.
No, I didn't hear. I didn't listen to his yet. It's on my agenda.
I remember the story. He said he was driving. It was like Christmas Eve, and he was driving. And his homeboy, who he said, full disclosure, dude had a strap on him. That's what he's there for.
Right.
And he's like, yo, you good? And Lou's like, yeah, I'm going home. It's a cool shot. He said, I watched him make a U-turn in my rearview mirror. I look down at my phone and I hear tap, tap, tap on the glass. I look up and dude got the gun on me. And he was like, give me a car. And Lou was like, huh? He said, I rolled down my window. So I don't know why. But I was like, huh? And dude said, Lou? He was like, man, I can't even do it to you.
Wow.
You do too much in this community, man. I can't even. He said, man, I'm broke. I don't got nothing to eat. All I got is this gun. I'm fresh out. And Lou was like, man, there's a McDonald's over there. I meet you over to McDonald's. I'll buy whatever you want to eat. And dude was like, bet. And so Lou's like, I was driving. So I called the homeboy, like, man, turn back around right now. He got there. He said, he paid for dude's food. And sort of told him, man, I get it, man, but this ain't the way. And
yeah.
Sort of left.
Damn.
But yeah. Dude had the gun on him. Was like, oh, I can't even shoot you, bro.
Shit.
Can't even do it.
And it makes them, it makes those guys, they've got this amazing talent, but they're just people, too. They're just people.
They're just people.
Yeah.
That's the funny thing. They talked about Lou Will didn't drink, and they had him drunk. for $15K, like, drank all this beer before they got to the plane.
Damn.
On the bus. Like, this is the dumb stuff that these rich dudes, they do dumb stuff that we do. They just got more money.
Yeah, yeah.
So they look fly, but they do the same ignorant, dumb
stupid
stuff
shit
that we do.
Yeah.
This is a great podcast. If you like hoop, mm-hmm. you want to hear Hooper's Hoop.
Yeah.
I was trying to explain it to my friend. Like, there's this weird barrier. As much as I love these other guys who do interviews with athletes, there is a weird barrier when you're not an athlete. There's some things that aren't necessarily shorthand that you're not really going to get.
Yeah.
And they're not as comfortable. But when they're sitting down with two guys who know the game, like Kevin Durant was so transparent on that Knuckleheads podcast.
Yeah, he was.
Just honest with his conversations. Yeah, and just how he felt. And because they understand it. And honest about other hoopers.
Yeah.
Guys who they respect. That's what I love, that first conversation about who first person bust your ass. Because it's always sometimes it's not somebody like Melo. Sometimes it's like a random, like, Anderson Varejao gave me buckets. I didn't know what to do. And he was, he gave me, 25 and 10.
Right. Yeah. That's, I really enjoy those. Because those are the closest people to superheroes that we have. Athletes are like, they do these amazing things, man. It's just like I was playing Madden yesterday and I tweeted this, guys. I was playing with Lamar Jackson. I was like, man, I just played one drive. I was out of breath and, like, playing with him.
He's so much fun to watch.
Bro. Yeah, he's on my side. Yeah, so I enjoy those podcasts and all that stuff. Now I want to get, let's talk about Waves since.
But before we get to Waves, I have a question for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Are you enjoying this black quarterback renaissance?
Do you even have to ask that?
I mean, I want to know how much I haven't heard you talk much about it. I want to know how much you're enjoying it.
Of course I am. There's like two, it's like possibly three of them could be an MVP.
Yeah.
The only thing that I'm concerned about is just the playoffs. Now, how many of them are going to make it? Like maybe.
So who makes it?
Well, the Cowboys are looking good. The
Cowboys.
So we got Lamar, Deshaun. We got the Seahawks. So we got, you know.
That's four.
The Chiefs, Patrick.
Chiefs, that's five.
Did we say Russell Wilson?
Yeah.
So that's a good number. AFC wise, you got to get past Tom Brady. I don't care what their record is. I don't care. The reason why Patrick Mahomes, see, like, they don't have any, I don't see them as having a defense.
Chiefs, yeah, the defense is very bad.
Defense is trash. So, you know, we got a chance for at least one of them, at least one conference to have a black quarterback. So,
Have we ever had two black quarterbacks in the Super Bowl?
No.
So, you would have Wilson against Lamar? Would you?
It would be like if I was a parent. You know how like Steph Curry's parents, you know, when they were watching, they're watching their two kids play, and then, you know, you kind of don't. Yeah. So I would kind of be like, if Lamar and Russell were in the Super Bowl, well, it would be nice to see the younger guy get it. Cause I almost feel like Russell should have had two. He should already had two.
Don't remind people around here about that.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it's a sore spot.
Oh my God, I don't even live there. I've never been there, and I'm sick over it.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
I can't get over that, man. I don't think I'll ever get over that.
Yeah, that was bad.
I'll never get over that. That was
he's good. He's really good. I think people forget, even with him and him, Lamar are similar in the way that the conversation about them coming out of college was very similar. I don't know if they can throw in the pocket gimmick. You put them in for Wildcat, you know, special, you know, plays. I don't know if they can lead a team. And yeah, they both sort of ousted veteran quarterbacks to get mm-hmm. a starting role, and it was the right decision to make.
Yeah.
Flacco's done. He looks really bad.
Yeah, he's, you know.
Matt Flynn never played another meaningful down of football in his life.
Oh. Now Dak has, I'm looking at ESPN on mute, Dak Prescott has a Sleep Number commercial, so he's blowing up, man.
Yeah, Dak is the second most winning quarterback behind Brady of the last few years.
Yeah.
It's Dak Prescott, yeah.
It's
not all the other quarterbacks that pop up there. It's not Aaron Rodgers. It's mm-hmm. not it's Dak.
Yeah, they have to take, then they got to pay him.
Got to pay him. He's going to get what the market dictates. It's not, they shouldn't pay him 30. Well, that's the market, so he's getting 30.
Yeah.
He's getting 33.
I paid him in Madden. I used the Cowboys in Madden, and I won the Super mm-hmm. Bowl with them.
Nice. You paid him?
Yeah, I paid him, and, well, Ezekiel was already paid. I couldn't keep Amari Cooper, though. So, I mean, you know,
you gotta get somebody else.
He was too expensive. I didn't go the second season of the franchise, but I couldn't afford him. So,
yeah.
But so it goes. But those younger receivers are good. But yeah, to answer, you know, obviously I've answered your question, but yeah, I'm really excited about it. So I'll be invested. My only thing is just getting stressed out. Like the last time I was stressed out about sports was, I would say, LeBron in Cleveland. So three in 2016, I was pretty stressed out. That was
understandable.
Yeah, and then maybe prior to that would have been him getting his first one, because they're just on him so much. And then Russell Wilson in the Super, you know, in the Super Bowl. Yeah, so I try not to get too stressed out about sports.
Yeah, the stress is going to be tough.
Yeah, so this...
Don't be too stressed out. Yeah, it'll be fun.
So this year, it's going to be kind of... It's going to be kind of tough. Like, I actually maybe have some kind of investment in the Super Bowl, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah. I hope so. Hopefully it'll be fun. I think the playoffs are a good test to see how Lamar and them do in the playoffs.
Yeah. So we'll see. What else do we want to get into? Talk about anything else before we get into these movies?
Get into Waves.
Let's do Waves because that's a darker film. So I will, and so I will read the little blurb. And like I said, so Tim and I have talked for 45 minutes up to this point. We've shot the shit, hung out. We're going to get into Knives Out and Waves, and we're going to spoil them. So if you're interested in seeing these, I have a good feeling that we liked both of these and we recommend both of these films. So you can take our recommendation that we both enjoyed these and you can listen to the latter half of this after you see these movies. If not, we're going to fucking spoil them right now. So Waves is the epic emotional journey of a suburban African-American family as they navigate love, forgiveness, and coming together in the wake of a tragic loss. This movie was written and directed by Trey Edward Schultz, who had done It Comes at Night, and is it Krishna? Krisha? Ah, fuck. Krisha. I thought I was... It is Krisha, right? Yes, okay. It's Krisha, and It Comes at Night. It stars... Kevin Harrison Jr., Sterling K. Brown, Taylor Russell, Alexa Demi, Lucas Hedges, and Renee Elizabeth Goldsberry, I believe. Tim Hall, your overall thoughts on this film?
It was really good and also very exhausting. Like, yeah. I was exhausted after the first act. watching this sort of nightmare unfold, but it was really good, and I was very impressed with the young actors and their range, because they sort of carried the film.
Yeah, and I gotta say, Renee Elise Goldsberry, not Elizabeth. Sorry, sorry, and I'm supposed to be the black actors mayor.
Yeah, really well done. Really, really, really well done. Really, and we talked about it before, but like very reminiscent of A Place Beyond the Pines, the way it's sort of constructed.
Yeah. I'm just echoing what you said. I really felt like I fucked up by reading the plot on Wikipedia the night before.
Yeah.
I was more amped up to see this movie than I thought I was. And I was like, my anxiety or my weirdness was like, am I going to see it Friday after work? What am I going to do? Am I going to wait till Sunday? Am I going to go into the city? And what am I going to do? Am I going to pay for parking? And I'm going to do. And I just read it. And I was like, fuck, I shouldn't have did that. And so I ended up going home on Friday night, taking a nap. And I said, fuck it. I'm going to the 10:30 screening. And I go into the city, found street parking that was free, and I was mollywopped, even though I still knew the plot. And right. It just, the tension of the first act, the first part of the movie, was just even more fucked up for me.
Yeah, it ramps up.
Yeah, and I felt
like this fever pitch, and you're like, oh god,
this the cinematography. Who's a cinematographer on this thing? Drew Daniels. The thing that they were doing at the opening, they revisited it a couple of times, right? A few times they did it, and just the way that you see this, the character, the Tyler character. What is his name? Oh shit!
It is Tyler. Yeah.
Okay. The Tyler character. You see what his life is like. And it didn't have to explain so much. It just told us so much in a short period of time, like the opening credits. And it was just like, it did a great job of establishing who he was, and what he was about, and
right.
and very it was very impressive.
Yeah, it's a really good way to give exposition to characters without having them having to say it. You're sort of watching these guys and you're like, okay, this is kind of who this person is.
Yeah. I like some of those shots, like where it kind of reminded me of, actually, this just made me think of this, but the shots in like Black Swan, when you see like Natalie Portman, it's just like the back of her head and she's walking in to the, you know, to class or the rehearsals and all that. And you just kind of, it's just like really intense. And it didn't really let up. There were certain times where I felt, I did really feel really bad for this kid. And this kid's a wrestler. He's a varsity athlete. He's popular. He's got a lot of friends. And then you get to his life where he's in high school, junior, senior. What is he, a senior?
He's a junior.
Junior, right. So he's 17 years old. Prime of his life, entering the prime of his life. And you get home, and then he kind of shuts down a little bit because of his dad.
It's a very muted home life for him.
Yeah. It's one of those... this movie, I would say, it's one of those movies that I've always wanted to see this at this level. I always appreciated when I really started enjoying film. It was like 99 when I started, but 1999 when I started like buying DVDs and renting all these different types of movies. And it was like, this was around the time of like American Beauty and Happiness,
right.
Like Todd Solondz give you a grittier version of suburban life, the Ice Storm, where you see these people of stature, people of wealth, dealing with tragedy, just dealing with what it's like to be an upper middle class person. And I always always wanted like, what's the black version of this?
Right.
What is it like?
Usually the black version is like they're struggling to survive.
Yeah.
And they're strapped with poverty. And this isn't this family.
Right.
They're fine.
And when people make this comparison to Moonlight, I said, that's bullshit. Yeah, they're in the fucking water. But, I mean, they're in South Florida. Who doesn't do a movie in Florida where they're not by the water or some shit?
Yeah.
You know, I get it. But
those scenes are way different.
Yeah.
Like the scenes are completely different types of scenes.
Yeah, it's like Moonlight. It's an A24 movie, but come on, guys. Really? It's not Moonlight. But man, that's me being a dick. But
no.
Or me being pretentious, but it's not the same thing. And this is kind of, I want to talk to you about this, and we'll get in, and then we'll get back into the story. How did you feel? Because I felt some kind of way, and I felt a little different after I talked to you on that the night that I saw it. How did you feel about a movie obviously this is a black movie and a black story, and it's written and directed by a white man. How do you feel about films like that?
I mean, it doesn't bother me. Are they able to tell a story that's honest about the black experience and what that's like? And I think you see an article last week.
Yes.
And in an article, they sort of addressed that, and the director made it a collaborative thing.
Right.
And I think that's why there are little nuances in there that are like, oh yeah, this is, you know, with the way Sterling K. Brown approaches his son as a father, it's very much something I've seen.
Yes.
Not necessarily from my dad, but I've definitely seen it.
That's interesting. So you never got that talk?
Yeah, but not in that way.
I don't think I ever really got, you gots to be.
Yeah, I've seen it though. I've heard it at barbershops. I've heard it, you know, in different spaces with older black men and black women. But I think you've either had to have gone through that or heard it or been around it to put that in the film in such an honest way.
I totally get it, but I don't think my dad was just like, We're paying money for you to go to this fucking school. Get your work. Get your work. Do your work. Yeah, these white kids are going to do X, Y, and Z, but you just get your work done.
Right.
There was an my parents and I had an understanding, and I didn't want to disappoint them, and I didn't want to fuck up on my own, you know?
Right. And that, for me, that was part of it too. Just not want to disappoint your parents in whatever it is that you do. But my dad's always been very encouraging and uplifting. And, but also, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't want to like look at him and be like, yo, man, I disappointed you by doing something real stupid.
And I think you're right. I think you're right because they were true. It was a collaborative experience. And the director came to Kelvin saying, hey, I want you to be a part of this movie. You can pick the part that you want. You can be the brother, or you can be the boyfriend who saves the day. And he says, well, the better part, the more interesting part is the brother. And then they began to construct the film around those stories. So I think you handle, like, the director, writer handles the structure of the project, of the film, and you fill the blackness in. You put that experience, you put your stamp on that. And I think when you have talented people like the ones that are in this film, I don't have a problem with it. I don't see anything wrong with it. And it's like these articles about, like, I think some people are trying to outwoke each other. Where it's like the black experience and black pain.
You said think? They're definitely.
They are doing it. I was trying to give them the benefit of, but they are. You're right. And it's like, no, this is, people deal with this stuff. There's tragedies that happen in people's families and they have to deal with it. Black people deal with that shit too. And that's important. I think it's important. To see something like this, I mean, this is right up my alley as a film goer, somebody that loves, you know, movies. I want to see that experience, and it's heartbreaking, but I think it's a story that's worth that should be told.
It's worth exploring. I think about my friends and my friends' kids. Like, my friends' kids aren't gonna have the experience that we had growing up.
Right.
These kids are like upper middle class kids with parents with good jobs. So their problems aren't going to be that. They're not going to be, it's not going to be juice. It's not going to be Boys in the Hood. It's not going to be Men in Society. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be, you know, Stroud of Brooklyn. It's not going to be any of that.
Yeah.
It's going to be more like this.
Yeah.
Like a kid who has everything trying to figure out, trying to navigate his future and feeling pressure from his parents to be great.
Mm-hmm. And you got to think.
And what happens when it's not great?
Right. And you got to think, these people were so rich that they didn't even have to go to private school. Like, I guess the school district that they're in is good enough for them to, you know, go wherever they want to go for school.
Yeah, they have a blossoming wrestling program.
Yeah. Like, it's that kind of school. Right. Like, where wrestling is popular. Who would have thought? So, you know, Tyler has this girlfriend, and we find out that she's pregnant.
Yeah, man.
And
that was a crazy scene.
Yeah, so she's late. They get that through text, and they decide that they're going to get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the clinic. And she can't go. She doesn't want to go through it. And it's played by.
The way they set it up is she goes in the room.
Yeah.
Comes out and it's like, I'm just ready to go. Now Tyler's thinking, oh, she's upset because she just had an abortion.
Yeah.
Let's get her in the truck. Let's get her out of here. Once they get in the truck and she starts talking.
Wait, hold on. What did you think about before they got back into the truck?
That racist lady outside?
Yeah.
That's Florida. I've been to Florida. That's definitely part of Florida.
I get it, but I guess, did we...
necessary?
Was it... Do you think that was necessary? Yeah, let me ask you.
No, maybe not.
Yeah, yeah. I was like...
Maybe not.
But
it's the first time we've ever seen him upset.
Yeah.
We never see him. He's pretty, like, chill and even keel for the most part.
Right.
We see him, you know... but we never see him upset.
Yeah.
And that's our first sort of like, oh, he has like a switch in him.
Yes, there's rage.
Yeah, it's in him. It's not wrestling. It's not, it's just, there's this rage in this kid.
And it's probably because do you think he hates his dad?
Yeah, he 100% hates his dad.
Well, he actually said, there's a blow up scene. So they're in the truck and we find out that she doesn't go through with it.
Nope. Doesn't go through with the abortion. And he's like, what? She's like, I just couldn't do it with my body. He's confused and absolutely disgusted the fact that she didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have what to me looks like a very honest conversation that a juvenile kid would have with his girlfriend about not having an abortion.
Yeah.
Where he's clearly upset. He's lashing out. It's all kind of FUs and we're kids. He goes from being a supportive boyfriend to like, what's wrong with you? We're kids. We don't need to be having no babies.
Right.
And she ends up getting out the car.
Yeah, she gets out of the car.
Then he tries to like, oh, come on, baby. It's okay. It's like, just, you're not going to walk. Just get back in the car. We don't have to talk about it. I'll just drive you home. He's like, well, F you then. And, like,
and this is she's played by Alexa Demi.
Euphoria.
From Euphoria. Alexis. I think she's mm-hmm. really good. Somebody tried to say it was the same character. It's not the same character.
No.
I think that's just being a little dismissive. I think for this part, her character in Euphoria doesn't get pregnant.
And her character in Euphoria is like actively sort of wilding out.
Yeah,
she's just a high school girl.
She's like a high school girl that's going to school. She's got a boyfriend, and
Euphoria girl is doing the most, and Euphoria is sort of everything sort of hyper realized in that show.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's not the same.
This is more a grounded character.
Right. This isn't the same. And interesting thing, so I guess do we get... so we find out that Tyler has an injury. Mm-hmm. It's a slap tear in his in his shoulder. And he's keeping it from his parents. And they don't really know.
Yeah, because that means he can't wrestle for the rest of the year. And, you know, he's just like thinking about scholarship. I think part of it is disappointing his father.
Yeah. And if he can't, if it gets to a certain point, if he gets injured again, he may never wrestle ever again.
Yeah.
And it's weird. You're 17 and you go to the doctor and it's like your mom or dad isn't there.
Yeah.
To like,
yeah, at least T.I.'s not there checking to make sure your shoulder's okay.
Yeah. It's like, there's not anybody that's like, he's a minor. So, know, like nobody's there to just like, okay, we got to think about this stuff, son. He's just there by himself, and he starts this decline where he's just taking his dad's painkillers and he's drinking. Mm-hmm. Now there's an interesting scene where the dad, Ronald, comes home and he goes to the wife and says, have you been taking my painkillers? Because he's got a bad knee.
Yeah, he's got a bad knee, yeah.
And she's like, no. And he's like, all right. Do you think he knows that Tyler's taking his pills?
I think he has an idea.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want to confront him about it. He's just like, oh, okay.
It's just
because he asked her in front of him.
Yeah. It's just like, oh,
I think he has an idea, but I don't think he's for sure.
And he doesn't.
Because there's a lot going on, obviously.
Yeah, and he doesn't seem to care. It's just like, well, I mean, he's just taking, you know.
One thing that I appreciate about the film is like he's not like cheating on his wife or anything. There's no mistress. There's no.
He's just a dick.
I kept waiting for him to he's probably out here, you know, doing something when he's supposed to be doing construction work. No, he's
yeah. He just got injured. What was the? Was it just an accident, or he just?
Yeah, I think it was like running or something. Because they mentioned him being active, and he hurt his knee.
Yeah, and it's just that suburban thing. It's not anything like you said. It's nothing salacious. These are just people that are. He's in his role. He's he's the provider. He's got his own a business that's thriving, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. We got this big ass house. I'm working. The kids are in school. We're teaching them a work ethic. They got an ethic and work ethic, and that's it.
Yep, that's it.
And so then we then we get to this wrestling match where mom and dad are there, and he gets beat, and because his shoulder's fucked up.
He injures his shoulder, yeah. And that was painful to watch.
Yeah. And you can see the disappointment in both Ronald and Tyler.
Yeah, and that zoom in on Ronald's face.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh. That, I remember that look from I failed my driver's test the first time, and my dad was at,
oh, no.
My dad was at the top of the hill, and I could just see him like, fuck! You know, just be like, damn it. We went over this. We parallel parked. Because they make you, when you fail, they make you get out of the car, and the guy drives you back up through the course.
And oh, no.
And he's like, if you hit the flag again, you're going to fail or whatever. So I failed, and I did it with my mom the next time, and I got it. But, yeah, I could just see my dad at the top was just like, oh, fuck. You know, but I know that disappointment. Then he's just in this downward spiral. He's drinking.
Yeah.
He comes home, and he one night drunk, and he breaks down, and he's throwing up, and he breaks down in the bathroom, and his sister, Emily, comes in and consoles him. That's the only time you see
them. That's the first real scene we have with her.
Yeah.
Other than her sort of being in the background, when she comes in and consoles her brother and tells him to be quiet because you're going to wake mom and dad. And,
right. You
know, tells him it's okay. He's just like apologizing to her.
Yeah. He's just hanging out with his friends. Listening to rap music, listening to Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, and listening to Kendrick.
Wilding out.
Freestyling over a bonfire. I get it.
Yeah. And he's supposed to go to the dance. It's the night of their, like, what is it, homecoming or junior prom or some kind of dance. And he's supposed to go with Alexis. And she tells him that she's going to have the baby. She's told her parents about it. And she doesn't want anything to do with him anymore. She breaks up with him over the phone, over text.
Because I'm blocking you now.
And blocks him. And Tyler loses it.
Yep.
And he fucks up his room, and he gets grounded. Now, is that over the course of the day? Is that dance the same night?
Yeah. I think it's the same night.
Okay, so the dance is the same night. He's taking pills, and he's drinking. And he decides he's got the FOMO. He sees the Instagram of her hanging out with
some other guy.
I guess, well, we won't spoil that yet. We won't talk about that yet. And as soon, now, I'm having known what's gonna happen, seeing it, I'm probably going to have to see this again. But if I don't get a screener or something, but as soon as I heard, we haven't even talked about the music yet. I thought that the music was cool. I don't know of all these. I don't know of all these. Know all these artists, but I know when I heard Tyler the Creator, I was like, "Oh shit, it's over."
That was your cue that it was over.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what record that is. That's like I Fucking Hate You, or I think that's off of like. Might have been off the Wolf or Goblin album. You nerds that know, just, you know, tweet at me or email me or something. But when that Tyler the Creator song came on, I was like, oh God, this isn't good.
Yeah, this is going to end terribly.
Yeah. And then he ends, and then so he goes downstairs and he's grounded, but he gets the keys to the car
from his dad's office.
He goes from his dad's office, and his mom tries to stop him. Then his dad comes, and what happens, Tim?
He tells her, "You're not my mom."
Yeah, classic line.
Which is hurtful. She's like, "I am your mom." He's like, "No, you're not my mom." And tells his dad, "I effing hate you." And his dad's like, you know, say something else and gets in his face. And he steadily curses out his dad and then pushes him down and hurts his knee.
Yeah.
Now there's no one there to stop him from leaving. Because dad's got a hurt knee. So he's laying on the ground holding his knee. And he just storms out the house. Drunk and high as hell.
Yeah.
In his truck on his way to a party.
And he gets to
nothing good's going to come of this situation.
Nothing's good going to happen. And they're looking for him. The mom is calling calling everybody, calling his friends. Yeah. It's a shit show. And he gets to this party. His sister's at the party. Emily's been at the dance. She had a moment with Alexis where she helped her with her lipstick.
Over some lip gloss.
Yeah, lip gloss. Like a really sweet scene that's even more tragic once you find out what happens. Yeah. And I was like, I saw that scene. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. I was like, oh fuck. And so then he finally finds Alexis in the garage of the house that they're in.
Well, he sees her go upstairs with the guy.
Okay, yeah, he sees her go upstairs with the guy. Correct, yes.
Doesn't know what happens upstairs, and he sees her come downstairs, and that's when he follows her to the garage.
Yeah.
I assume she's getting more alcohol or something.
Yes. And he's
like, should you be drinking right now?
He confronts her, should you be drinking? You're pregnant. And she starts yelling at him, and this is where we find out. This is where we kind of get more of the character, because I want to go back to something after we get to the end of this first half. But we find out about who he is. Like, so she says, you know, you never listen to me. Such a guy is gay. If you ever spent time to hang out with me and my friends, you would know that.
You know this. Yep.
I'm just getting more drinks for them. He doesn't want to hear that.
He ignores all of that.
He ignores all of it, and she grabs her, and then she tries to get away. Then she hits him, right?
Yeah.
She kind of hits him, and then he pushes
her.
Get off. She falls, hits her head on the cement, like the cement pavement, and bleeds out.
Yeah.
She's dead.
Yeah. Or at least dying.
She's dying.
Yeah.
And he runs away. And the police eventually, I don't know where the fuck he thinks he's going.
Yeah, he just is in like panic mode.
Yeah.
He does the moment of like, oh my God, he's freaking out. And then someone sees them in there and he bails.
Yeah.
And they scream and they come in there and, you know. Everyone's seeing her. They call 911. And he just speeds home.
Yeah.
Doesn't tell mom what's happening. Just runs home. Dad shows up. And dad has an idea what happened. He shows up and he kind of knows his son did something.
Yeah.
The police are there. And he sees her daughter. She's kind of shook up. He's like, hey, was Tyler here? Who was your brother here? Yeah. He always says that his girlfriend. Is that her?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah. Because was he here? He's like, yeah. But, all right.
Didn't seem like they knew Alexis.
Huh?
Did Ronald and his wife know Alexis? That was his girl?
I don't really get the idea that they did. Because they never call her.
Right.
When they're looking for him. That would be the first phone call.
Because Alexis's parents knew him. So Alexis dies. She tragically dies. It's over for Tyler. He gets arrested.
Yeah, he gets arrested.
And he's so. This is what I really appreciated about the movie. This is why what makes it an even bigger tragedy. The establishing shots, a lot of those establishing shots, he's hanging out with her parents.
Yeah,
that's a role
in their home.
Like Clifton Collins, it's interesting that he took that's an actor of note. Like he's
one line.
Yeah, he's a character actor. He's also in Honey Boy too. He did one scene in Honey Boy. He's an actor of note. They show that shot of them eating dinner. The Alexis's parents and Tyler eating dinner together. Okay, couldn't somebody have fucking talked to somebody?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like...
Yeah, you get the idea that their families weren't close. He's never sort of ingratiated her into his life the way she has with him.
Right.
Or she's tried to.
Right.
He's got this athlete, you're my girlfriend, that's kind of it. I've got the hot girl at school.
Yeah.
We hook up, we party together, that's it.
Yeah.
And not, like, building a real relationship where she, on the other hand, really cares about him and is trying to build a relationship.
Right. And you could tell...
Having him for dinner...
Yeah, and then, like, and that's
with him and his friends. You don't see her.
You don't. No, you don't.
It's just him.
That's interesting.
Him and his buddies.
There was a scene. Wasn't she in the car though? She was in the car at one point. Like that. Like all those kids. Like they're popular and stuff. But the thing that struck me the most was that scene with the parents. And it's like they're. I was like, oh, that's a sweet scene. Then she's putting the dye in his hair. That's when I knew that that scene, that character was not the same as her Euphoria character, because there was actual love. Like her boyfriend in Euphoria, Nate, was like, he's probably like a closeted homosexual or something.
Yeah, he's in that job.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's had like crazy. Some Patrick Bateman thing going on. But with this, like there was this sweetness, and obviously you can go to that Moonlight-esque looking scene where they're at the lake or whatever. And you know, they do have that meeting where she's like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. You know, like, was that after the abortion clinic when they meet at their little, at that bench and in front of the water? Is that after the abortion scene?
That's before.
It's before the abortion scene.
Yeah.
Then they go, okay.
I'm here for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. That's just, it's almost like, it's like, fuck, man. Like you're 17. You can't talk to your parents and say, look, I got this girl pregnant. She wants to keep it.
I don't know what to do.
I don't know what to do. Like, it could have just been that. I would have been disappointed. You know, I would have been scared to tell my parents, but I like to think that I would have just told them. You know, and not, you can't hide
that Band-Aid off.
You just got to rip the Band-Aid off. And it's like nobody fucking talked. But then you got
to
think.
I mean, that bleeds into that conversation he has with his dad when they're in his office and he's doing the work for him.
Yeah.
About, like, what he wants for him, and you got to be 10 times better. And I think all of that he's been telling him for a long time is seeped into him, and that's why he doesn't tell his dad.
Yeah.
Out of fear of disappointment.
Right.
That's why he doesn't tell him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just felt bad. Like, that just even brings, it's like you said, like you, like with that exposition showing you so much without telling you and without beating you over the head.
Yeah. This is a conversation they've been having for a long time and it's weighing on him, because even Tyler's character, I mean, the shoulder thing, him using drugs, him drinking, he's not talking to anybody about his problems.
Right.
Ever. Not his friends, not his girlfriend, not his parents. He bottles all that stuff in him until it sort of erupts at the worst possible time, and he murders somebody he cares about.
Yeah, it's just like that.
And to me, that was like intense. Like, oh, this guy who's of means and has access to all these things and has parents who care about him does not feel like he can talk to anybody.
Yeah, you think about those lacrosse players. And you sent me an article with that kid from Miami, played with the Dolphins.
Yeah,
he beat up his pregnant girlfriend.
Yeah,
but Colin Kaepernick can't play in the league because he's.
Yeah, but what are you doing? Like, why are you punching your pregnant girlfriend?
You
like, why is that an option for you?
Yeah. So it was just so much like the way that rolled out was just like, oh, we know about his character just from that scene right before she dies. She's like, if you'd have hung out with my friends, or you know, this guy's gay.
Yeah,
I'm getting them drinks. That's it.
Yeah, he didn't show up at the party. And
I would just be sad. Like, when a girl said that she didn't like me like that, I would just be sad. And I'd listen to Brian McKnight. Show you how your pussy works is, that was pre that. But I would listen. I would be sad and mope around. And, you know,
I'm so thankful that I wasn't born during a time when the internet is what it is now, because I would have definitely done and said some dumb shit.
It's so hard, dude.
After a breakup.
Yeah, I wonder what, you know, like it would just, you would just be in your own emotions and you listen.
All the time. About stuff that's not even important.
Right.
About girls who don't care about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude.
I'm so thankful I'm not that living some long, Instagram video.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Or taking my specific situation and extrapolating it to larger. Why girls don't like guys who enjoy X-Men cartoons?
Yeah, man. You know what, though? Dude, it's so funny. It's so funny to me that, like, I think I'm not in a relationship or anything, because I know that I close myself off to a lot of that shit. And that's mm-hmm. something that I have to work on as a person. But mm-hmm. what I've noticed, a lot of these nerds on YouTube, like this like subculture of nerd people that have like these action figures or these sneaker collection guys or any of these people, a lot of them have girlfriends, man. And there's somebody for everybody. Like, yeah. So it's kind of like bullshit when you see some of these people try to pontificate on these Twitter threads that there's like, oh, nobody likes this type of guy or that, you know. I saw like this dude was doing a video about one of these Marvel Legends Spider-Man figures, and his girlfriend was there, you know, was with him, you know, and it was cute. It was sweet, you know. It gets like, you know, it warms your heart. I say, I got to open myself up so I can get somebody that likes me for my weird shit.
You know how many beautiful black women I see cosplay every year?
Yeah.
Gorgeous, yeah.
It's a lot of them.
Yeah, that's a whole level of nerddom, if you will, to go through all that to cosplay. And
right, exactly.
Some obscure anime character.
Mm-hmm. So that was just, I really appreciated that about the movie, like how character is revealed through that dialogue. And it's like, because you don't know who Tyler is.
No.
You just know he's not going to tell you.
No, you know, we're watching like a couple weeks in Tyler's life.
Yeah. It's just all internalized. And that's a testament to Kelvin Harrison. You get those, like, I think as far as these young actors are concerned, like, this guy's got next. I mean, he's constantly working.
Man. I was telling my friend, like, he's who the white people think Timothy Chalamet is.
Yeah.
I
know what you mean.
That's who he is. That he's that.
But he black. You know what I'm saying? So
he's black. So he's, you know, he's that.
Because he said, yeah, I'm not an athlete, so I had to work at.
Yeah,
he's a musician. He's like his dad's a musician, and you know, the other like nice touch that they did that we talked about the night that I saw it, where it was like that scene where he played the piano. It was just like a random scene of him playing the piano. Then they cut to him running, and it was like he did his own score. That was pretty neat. Like, I liked
that. That's a really great scene.
Yeah, I really like that. It's just nice little flourishes. Even though people are gonna touch on the aesthetics of like, oh, the cool hip music and blah, blah, blah. And as an old guy, like, I get it. I get that this is cool. These songs that they're singing are cool and stuff like that. But it really, like, that touch of that moment was really, actually really beautiful. And it was something, maybe, dude, like, maybe you don't have to fucking wrestle. Maybe you can do something else.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what I mean.
There's something else you can do.
Yeah,
but he's, you know, but his dad tells him you want to do wrestling, so we're all in.
Like, he did say that. This, he said you pick this.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting too. Yeah, that's a good point. This. Yeah.
So since you picked this, this is what we're doing. We're not gonna go halfway with it. We're gonna get up. We're gonna run. We're gonna work out. We're gonna do all of this since you picked it.
My dad
picked it,
dude. When my dad was on, when he did this podcast, like, 5 or 6 years ago, we were talking about, like, I was a big kid when I would play with, in football, I played with the eighth graders, and I was in fifth grade, and because I was a bigger kid, but I had to lose weight, I had to make weight, and I used to run around the football field and the park in a garbage bag under my sweat clothes, and to make the weight. And my dad was like, we were talking about that on the podcast, he was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that. But I mean, because he did want that more than I did. Like, I wanted to play football because as a kid, you don't know what the fuck I'm 10.
Yeah.
But he was like, okay, you want to play football, then this is what we're going to do. You know, I could see that he wanted that. And he would admit to that now, and it's nothing you know, it's nothing bad, but like once I started getting into theater, he was like, well, this is what you do. And he said, like, because it was probably one of like the proudest moments of my like childhood, like when he said that all the black parents like really loved you in that play. I played Max in The Sound of Music. Like I helped the Von Trapp family escape from the Nazis. A black, you know, that's a colorblind casting back then. They were progressive in 1994. But like those moments where my dad had to say, like, you know, he had to step back and say, well, this is what you want to do and you're good at it. Yeah. And I have to support, like, but he would always say, you know, if you play football, you had more girls. but there were girls in theater and in the drama club too. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's something that definitely made me reflect on how I came up. And I was like, oh God, I'm thankful. And not to say that there's not any darkness, you know, in my life or in my childhood, but for the most part, I feel like I could talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, I had anxiety about stuff, but for the most part, I would say if stuff was that heightened, I would be able to, you know, tell them. You know, but you know,
hope so.
Yeah, I would hope so. And it's just one of those things where it's like, that's where the fucking tragedy is, dude. You could have, and that's what's kind of heart. That's what's heartbreaking for me about it. And then we still got another hour. So I mean, is there anything else you want to say? I think you kind of had some really good touch points on the character of Tyler in this first half.
Yeah, no, that was it. I mean, I think Sterling K. Brown is a really strong actor.
Yeah.
You know, this was a reminder that he's really, really good at what he does. He's one of the best.
Yeah. And even he had some trepidation. You know, he talks about in interviews that he had trepidation about taking this character. You got the father of this black kid who actually kills somebody. And it's like, this is the character. I'm concerned about images and stuff that I portray and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like, this is a story. We're being the storytellers. Mm-hmm. Stuff like this happens sometimes.
Yeah, it does happen. It happens all the time. Like, we look at these people who commit these heinous crimes, but there's family members that are attached to them.
Right.
There's people who love them. They're uncles and brothers and cousins and sisters of people who have to live on once you get locked up.
Mm-hmm.
There's people who still got to live with the fact you did this.
Yeah.
You're very much isolated in your prison cell, but man, I got to carry this family name.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to Google you and I show up and you did this heinous crime. You raped a bunch of women. Like, I got to live with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a whole nother, which I think is the second part of this film.
And I think usually films kind of end to a certain degree where the first half of this ends and you don't get to see that. And I think that's what's interesting about this. Cause like, I think, like the ice storm was kind of like this thing happens and it's kind of fucked up and people sober up and it's over. American Beauty. There's something that happens. You have this revelation and something happens.
Yeah,
and
that's
and
the climax of the film.
And that's it. And it's over. Happiness was more of a character study, but like I just bring those up because those are the films to me that I was like, man, these are cool stories. I wish there were black people in them. Like I wish there were black. They did a black version of this, and I think that's what we get in this one. So now we switch to Emily's story, and we see the luminous Taylor Russell.
Mm-hmm.
As Emily, who is Tyler's sister, and the focus for the second part is about her. How do you feel about this second part and Russell's performance?
I really enjoyed the second part because I think it's what you're just sort of mentioning. Like, well, what's the next step? Like, what happens after John McClane saves everyone in the Nakatomi Tower? Like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
What? How does that affect his relationship with his wife? Mm-hmm. What happens to the company? You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
And if you're telling an interesting story, that's an interesting thing to sort of drill down into, which is like, well, man, what actually did happen? Mm-hmm. So you're seeing sort of, you know, she gets off of social media because she's reading all this heinous stuff about her brother that's not,
yeah,
you know, pitting him out to be a monster. And you find out later on, she sort of internalized a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't really mention it until they have that to go fishing.
Right.
After the mom tells the dad, and she's very right about it, that you're not there for her. Like, you haven't really been here for her.
She says, I can't even look at you. I don't like you. Can't even look at you anymore.
Because I see him in it. Those are real things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So she ends up meeting Lucas Hedges' character, and he invites her out to eat, and like, he knows who she is.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem to care.
Yeah.
He just thinks she's cute and wants to go out to eat. And so they start this relationship. And, you know, the one thing I like that they do is they show her, the last time we see her, she's at this dance. She's taking photos with kids.
And mm-hmm.
She's around these she's a younger girl around this popular group of kids. She's at these parties, hanging out.
Yeah.
Having fun. And the next time we see her, she's very much isolated in the school by herself.
Yeah.
Not with anybody. Very much alone, with her head kind of down, walking through the school, trying to be unseen.
What is she, like a sophomore or a freshman?
Yeah, she's probably like a sophomore, yeah.
So he's freshman, a year sophomore. Older. So
yeah, she got to be a sophomore because they were in the same school, going to the same dance when he was.
Yeah. So I like this, but I liked her half because I thought that in the first half, she's kind of out of focus.
Yeah, she's not really there.
It's almost like when you watch, like, it's not to the level of like how Eternal Sunshine was, when the people's faces were kind of like pixelated out in a certain, yeah, in that certain part of that movie. But it was just like, she's like kind of like not in focus. Or when she's comforting him in the bathroom, it's just kind of mm-hmm. like a real extreme close up, and it was, you know, it worked for the scene. But then when you see her, it's like, okay, man, this is totally different. This is mm-hmm. She is really shut down, and like an adult, or like a mature person, she gets away from social media. She unplugs. Yeah. I don't know if I could do that if I was growing up in this day and age.
It would be impossible.
It would be. And so she does this thing. It's like, this thing is giving me pain. And then sometimes at 40, I'm like, almost 40, like, I kind of want to get off Facebook, but I kind of need it. I kind of need, you know, social media because of the show business shit, or trying to, or just really even having a connection with people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, she does this really mature thing, and she shuts herself off. Now, this is what I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about, I want to see how, I'm trying to figure out how do we get to, she starts dating the Lucas Hedges character before the fishing scene. She starts hanging out with him, right?
Because she's happier.
She's happier. She mentions that she hates she starts dating Luke, and then she has that scene with her. He brings her out. And yeah. I mean, it's a good relation. It's a very caring, healthy
yeah.
and soothing relationship.
I was like, man, because he was a wrestler. Like, oh, this is going to be like his repeating itself. He's going to beat her up, find out she's pregnant or something.
And I like how we see him for a hot second. We see Tyler take him down in the first half of the movie. I like that little touch that this dude was around. So he's like, yeah, I know your brother, but you know, he's basically he's basically like the Ralph Tresvant or John B that basically saves her, you know,
right, yeah.
and helps her out. So that's that character, and it's very sweet. But this scene with her dad, she feels guilt that she didn't stop him. I don't know if she could have. She might have been up dead.
That doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a guilt of, if I would have said something, mm-hmm. I could have been like the sort of pebble, the sort of like misdirected, this sort of wave that's coming, right? Mm-hmm. I could have been me. I could have said something, could have did something. I could have stopped him. He could have listened to me. Maybe would have calmed him down. And you know, it's all those doubts you have, because I'm obviously gone through pain. And what if there was something I could have done that could have stopped this?
Right.
A simple decision. And you replay these things in your mind all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time.
And then she had some kind of resentment towards her brother.
She did. She said he was a monster.
Did she? Okay, so she had that after the fact that the murder happened. But I think she kind of felt some kind of way even before. He was getting all the attention.
I'm sure she was aware of the kind of person he was, because they're obviously. He makes a comment that they don't really hang around each the same type of crowd of people.
Yeah.
when the moms ask him when they go to the dance together.
Right.
So I'm sure she's aware of who he is, but. That's kind of what it is.
Maybe I'm looking into it too much. It's just what she says in that scene. Like, I hate, he's a monster, and I feel bad. I could have helped, and that's where the pain is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That fair enough. That works for me.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
And you realize, because she hasn't talked to anybody, mm-hmm. that she's harboring all of this frustration about, I could have, she starts crying, talking about she could have said something.
Yeah.
And he tells her that there's nothing she could have done, and it reminds her that he's not a monster.
Right. My gripe with this, and I told you, I was kind of mad that it's like, okay, why does it have to be a white guy that mm-hmm. does this? And that's just me being.
Well, they're dating in real life.
Told me that. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw that picture of them that I sent to you at they were at like a Knicks game or a basketball game together. And I was like, okay, all right. Cause the director did give the option of like, yeah, it could have been Kelvin, could have been the boyfriend. So,
but does that make it different? Do they still cast Taylor as a sister?
I don't think so.
You know what I'm saying?
I think it's probably a white kid. Family. It might be Lucas Hedges.
It might be Lucas Hedges at the sort of unhinged. He could probably kill that role too.
And like Naomi Watts is the mom. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who, and somebody else is the dad.
Anna Taylor-Joy is the sister or something.
Yeah. We're casting it already.
Yeah, there we go.
Barry Pepper as the dad.
We're playing by everybody right now.
Bobby Cannavale maybe as the dad.
Yeah, as the dad.
There we go.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I was kind of tight, but then that's just me getting jealous. Like if I was 25, I would be trying to date her.
Yeah.
In the movie.
So we were about to watch Queen of Slim, and me and other critic were talking about it.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, man, I love that. He was like, wait, this girl's 25, right? I was like, yeah. He's like, man, because there's a scene where she's clearly in like a tank top, and you can see her nipples. And uh-huh. He was like, oh my God, she's like 16. Like, he was like mortified that they would put this underage girl's nipples on display in a movie. I was like, no. I said, look, I saw her in Lost in Space. I was like, oh man, this is a great young actress. Who's she?
Yeah, she's great. Beautiful.
And then she is. And then I remember seeing her in Escape Room playing older.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
Wait a minute. How old is this kid? Like, I thought she was a kid, because she's not playing like an adult, but definitely not playing a high school kid.
Right, right.
So I looked her up, like, oh, she's like in her mid-20s. Like, oh, she's got that Laura Harrier sort of like, I can play older and also play young and also date Clay Thompson and be okay with that.
But Laura Harrier looks, you could tell that
she
looks older than Taylor Russell. And Taylor Russell is kind of like that beautiful, where it's almost, it's like she could be, I bet even though she's an actress, she probably doesn't know how good looking. She's one of those women that probably doesn't know she's as good looking as she is.
I don't know. You probably have this experience where you go somewhere like a coffee shop. They're like, damn, this girl at the coffee shop was so fine the other day.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like, what are you doing at this coffee shop?
Yeah. What the fuck are you doing?
Else with yeah. What are you doing here?
What are you doing at GameStop? Yeah. There's this woman.
I tell my female friends all the time, like, you have no idea what that's like as a dude just to be going throughout your day.
Yeah,
and you'll tell another dude. You'll text the homies. You'll be like, "Hey, bro, I was just at whatever, and this girl behind the counter was so fine."
Yeah, and a lot of times they're kids. They're a kid. Like at the movie theater, there's a couple. I sound like a creep, but I would never try to talk to them or anything. I know that they're babe. They're kids, and this is like, God, when you're gonna be a heartbreaker. You know, like, but
for me, there's this college girl that works at the Trader Joe's. And I go, she's so fine.
Yeah.
She's clearly in college. She's clearly a college kid talking about her classes and going to school. And I think she goes to like Seattle U, which isn't too far from the Trader Joe's I go to. But I was like, she's so fine.
And you go when you only go when she's on her shift.
I went outside of Trader Joe's when she's in her aisle, no matter how long it is. No, she's fine. Like, it was one of those things where I was listening to some podcasts in my earbuds.
Yeah.
Just chilling, not paying attention. I get to the line and I look up and she's this gorgeous woman standing in front of me. It's like, hey, how are you doing? And I was like, I wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah, dude, that happened to me I went to the eye doctor a couple of weeks ago, earlier this month, and they were adjusting my glasses and I got some eye drops for my eyes and I was just kind of bummed out and just because I wasn't feeling well. And this beautiful woman just like fixes my glasses. And I was just like, she kind of looked like a young Rosalind Sanchez. And you're just
that's
like,
not bad.
And you're just like, Jesus Christ, what you're in Hackensack doing this? And she's just a nice person that wants to fix people's glasses. You know what I mean? It's just like, Jesus Christ. But
Taylor does have that appeal to her where you feel like, not like, like you look at someone like Margot Robbie, like, okay, you've been fine your whole
life. Exactly. Yeah.
At every turn that you're gorgeous and you got this pretty privilege everywhere you walk into.
Right.
But there are people like Taylor where you're like, oh, you're very attractive, but I don't know if you are aware that that's what's happening right now.
Right. And she seems like a sweet person. And that kind of just like in interviews I've seen, it just seems like she's really nice and like a little like grounded and a little, you know, she there's a sweetness about her performance that was that just kind of was radiant, and it seems like she's getting a lot of buzz from this performance.
She's really good, man. I was reading the article that she's doing Lost in Space. It comes out in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Season 2, and she's also doing Escape Room 2 in South America. It was South Africa.
Now,
so she's gonna be working, and I think this will be the thing that puts her on the map, and she'll be in some other really cool projects.
Yeah, her and Kelvin Harrison are gonna be working a long time.
They're gonna be good. They're both really good in it.
My only thing about her half was like, then it just kind of became about Luke's father, and I was like,
right.
I was like, I get it, but you know, you see that. Because when I was looking at it, you know, he was like, it's okay, Dad, you can go. And I was just kind of like, I was like, you know, like you get that cut of her with Tyler in the bathroom and then she remembers it and she starts crying. It's like, I get it, but it's like, I kind of would have liked more of her. A little more of a reconciliation, even though
I was going to say that. Yeah, that's the only thing nitpick about the film that I have is like, I want to see her sort of reconcile with her feelings about Tyler.
Yeah,
and more of the parents reconciling. Even there's that scene on the bed where they hold each other's hands.
Yeah,
you get the idea that they've come to some sort of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But that's such a tough thing to do.
Yeah, it is tough
in the midst of all of that tragedy to try to find love again and learn to enjoy things. Like my mom passed away a few years ago from cancer.
Yeah.
It took part of it was like still trying to find an enjoyment in things.
Yeah.
Still, like, it's because it's tough. You're in this weird space where, like, you lost someone and there's all these pain, all these memories, and you're looking at your life is never going to be the same after this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you still then find joy? How do you find the joy? How do you, and a lot of these joyful moments I would share with her.
Yeah.
I would call and talk to her about, these stupid dates that I went on and, you know, little seeing things. And so then now there's this person who you can't share things with anymore. So
right.
Even for that family, there, as their life continues, there are moments of joy that these parents can't share with their son anymore.
Right.
Even as detached as he may have been at times, you got them in the diner. There's that diner scene.
Yeah.
You clearly see the eat of the family.
And they cared about each other. They loved each other.
They cared about each other. So here's a person you care about who you can no longer share these things with.
Yeah. My thing.
And that's tough.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's tough. It's really tough.
I agree. I think what would have kind of brought it even home a little more for me is if they didn't show Tyler again. Like that little montage, yeah. I was like, they
need him in the cell.
Yeah, they need to show that shit. Like,
or
I just
at least have her come see him.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? You're absolutely right. I don't think we talked. Did we? I don't think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. But like you just said, if she would have had a moment with him, and not the mom.
Yeah.
Then credits roll. I'm good.
I thought it was going to be her.
Me too.
Oh man, she's actually going to go see her brother, man. That's good. Good. She's done the thing that she's told her boyfriend to do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is go see this person and forgive them because you're never going to get this chance again. So I thought, so all these flashbacks to her and Tyler were like, oh, she's realizing that I need to be seeing my brother and having this conversation.
Yeah. That's
and
true.
It's a mark.
I would have liked to have seen that as opposed to the mom going there. As opposed to spending so much time, you just run off and go to Missouri with this guy, with your boyfriend.
I would have been murdered.
Shit.
There's no way I could be somewhere lying, being at a beach house with somebody.
Dog, I went to Wendy's. I went to Wendy's with some girls in my car, like during like a half day, and we were gonna go back to rehearsal. My mother happened to be at the same strip mall and she saw us. And I was like, fuck. I didn't get into trouble. But my mom, she was mad, but like, I didn't get grounded or anything. She was just like, look, you got all them kids in the car and you know, insurance, don't get pulled over. Yeah, you're going to get, you know, insurance, you get in an accident, you know, they'll be trying to sue and all that shit. So, you know, just watch what you don't do that shit. But like, I thought the world was over.
Yeah, you're like, oh, well.
I was like, oh, shit.
Start writing my eulogy.
Yeah, that's exactly. But, you know, but this shit, like, yeah, man, I would have liked to have seen that. That's my only gripe with it. I'm over.
Yeah.
My own bullshit is with like the, oh, come, we couldn't be black, you know, but, other than that, man, I would have liked a moment. If you're going to show Tyler again, don't just waste it on a montage. Show some type of...
Let him say something. We don't hear from him.
Right.
We don't hear from him after he gets... We don't hear him from after that argument with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
The last, like, actual lines he delivers.
Yeah, you just kind of see him getting sentenced, which I actually kind of... Yeah. I like that. I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit.
It wasn't the trial. It was the straight-up sentence.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, this dude.
Yeah. Cooked. It's like, it's over. That nigga's hair ain't dyed no more. He ain't got the...
yeah, it's all grown out and bushy-looking.
No Odell Beckham no more. Just...
Yeah.
And that's who he said he modeled it after, like, that hairstyle.
Yeah, and he's got that suit that's not really fitting well.
Yeah. I really liked it, man. It's not as... Yeah. You were saying you don't know how many times you would revisit it.
Yeah.
This one.
It's a lot. Maybe if I start watching again, I'm sort of can pick out these moments.
Yeah.
But man, as I was watching it, I was like, man, this is a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of deep. I remember, I'll never forget. So our theater was kind of packed.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment that he walked that garage, everybody was like, oh my God. Like, we all knew what was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody
mm-hmm.
took a deep breath and was like, ah. Oh.
Yeah.
Here we go.
It was only like a handful of people it's a good, a decent amount, probably maybe 20 or so. But people were just like, oh my God. Yeah, that was pretty rough. Do you want to talk about Knives Out? I think we recommend this one, but do you want to just talk about Knives Out at all, or what?
Yeah, it's up to you. I'm down. I'm not doing nothing but watching some black quarterback outduel Carson Wentz right now.
Okay, you got Red Zone going?
Yeah, no, I'm in Seattle, so the Seahawks.
Oh, okay,
game,
okay, I got Red Zone going in the background. Well, let's, man, dude, I love this one, man. I love Waves, and I think it's gonna be in my top five. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think I got Parasite at one right now. Parasite at one, Last Black Man in San Francisco. I got Loose. Shit, I don't know. Loose is there. I don't want to say Art of Self-Defense. That's I enjoyed that
was,
one.
That was fun to watch.
That was a fun one.
That was a fun one. It's so weird, man.
Yeah, I would have to look at my... I like The Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I can't... I'm not really mad at that one either.
Yeah, I need to watch that. I missed the screening for it, so I need to check that out.
It's a good one. It's really, like... I mean, I worked with Mario Heller and Can You Ever Forgive Me and stuff, but I think she's really good at doing these character pieces. Like, her first one was based off of a graphic novel, Diary of a Teenage Girl, but the last two are about real people.
Mm-hmm.
I would just suggest you not read anything about Neighborhood until you see it, because it's an interesting way how the story is told. And once you see it, I fucked up again. By listening,
you read about it again.
I was on my way to the theater to go see it, and I had Mario Heller was on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and she was like, "Oh, blah 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 blah, how the story was told." I was like, "Fuck, wish I didn't know that." It didn't hurt me, but I think, like, you know, going in, it was just like, God, I wish I kind of didn't know that, you know.
Yeah.
But it was I appreciate how she told that story, and I hope she gets considered for some Oscar love. Yeah, yeah. I'm biased since that's the first person to put me in a big film.
Maybe she'll put you in another film after this.
Yeah, we'll see. So yeah, dude, let's talk about. So yeah, Mr. Beautiful Neighborhood's gonna have to go. That's in the top five. So that round, that's pretty decent so far.
Solid, yeah.
Like a quick and dirty one. But I will just say, if Tom Hanks gets nominated, it's going to be for Best Supporting Actor.
Oh.
That's how I think it's going to go. It's going to be like Denzel in Cry Freedom, or Forrest Whitaker. Did Forrest Whitaker get Best Actor or Best Supporting?
Oh, for that Last King of Scotland?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. And so let's talk about Knives Out. Knives Out. All right. A detective and a trooper travel to a lush estate to interview the quirky relatives of a patriarch who died during his 85th birthday celebration. Film written and directed by Rian Johnson, a Marylander. Stars Chris Evans, Catherine Langford, Ana de Armas. Sorry, guys. Daniel Craig. Your thoughts, Tim?
Really fun.
Yeah.
I just a fun ensemble cast. I like laughed out loud the moment Daniel Craig opened his mouth with that southern accent.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Great cast. Like, we have an award for ensemble cast for our Critics Award season.
Okay.
And, yeah, they're probably going to win, or at least get nominated. It's a great cast. Funny story. Not as necessarily as clever as I thought it was going to be. It's going to be like super clever, but they sort of, you know, give away what's happening early and sort of didn't put the pieces together.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, I kind of knew once they kind of told us where plot-wise, where the story was going, you kind of feel like the person that they have in this that they cast in this certain situation is like, yeah. I get it. And I'm not mad at it, but it's like,
no.
I had a fun time watching it play out. And this is what, you know, I was alluding to earlier, where I'm in, you know, Wayne, New Jersey, which is like Western, close to kind of like West. It's Western New Jersey. And the clientele is a little different. And they could be like a little more like, they could be like savages to a certain degree. But it's a nice movie theater. And it's an AMC where it's like, it's not stadium seats, but they have reclining seats and they have heated seats, which is really interesting. Really fun in those moments, like a lot of people laughing together. And I really appreciated that communal experience.
I love the introduction of Daniel Craig because he's just sort of sitting in the background.
Yeah, like, who's that guy?
In the shadows. And they're like, who's that guy?
Yeah.
He's just hitting the keys on the keyboard, on the piano. And people were like, what? What is going on back there? Yeah. Who's this guy?
And I've got to say this for Rod and J.L. Covan. Ana de Armas, what a revelation. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Do you see her in Hands of Stone?
No, I don't. Oh, was that who she was? The Roberto Duran?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. She is.
Yeah. And Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, I didn't get through that movie. But you know what?
She plays Joy, like this AI character.
Oh, and she was in War Dogs. Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's in War Dogs. Yeah, she's the girlfriend.
I want to go back to
She's not in War Dogs a lot, though.
No, she's. Is she Jonah Hill's girl?
Yeah.
Of course she
or
is.
No.
Or
Miles Teller.
Miles Teller. She is she's somebody who knows how hot she is.
Yes, I think she's aware of that.
And I'm not mad at it at all.
And they have her like really playing Jane in this film.
They do, but it's hard to keep that down. That's like putting glasses on Rachel Lee Cook and trying to act like she's not
hot anymore.
Yeah, like she's got this big ass sweater, but like, oh yeah, we can't tell that you can't put a sweater on anybody's face. She's so beautiful.
Good.
She's
good. She's good in this film.
And she's a very good actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's
perfect in this film.
Now let me ask you this, dude. Have you seen Ready or Not?
Yes.
Now this movie and Ready or Not, I'm gonna put my Hotep hat cap on really quick. And I'm gonna say that these two movies, Ready or Not and Knives Out, are great examples of the importance of whiteness and the maintenance of whiteness, trying to maintain it at all costs. So whatever we have to do to maintain whiteness, it's going to be done. And I don't care. I don't care who gets hurt, as long as I get what I want and need.
Because the family loves her and they tell her, I mean, when we first are introduced to her, she's showing up at the house and they're like, you're just like family to us. And
right.
And everyone tells her it wasn't, I didn't vote for you. I voted for you to be at the funeral. Why wasn't she there? Like you get multiple people being like, oh, I really wanted you there. You weren't at the funeral. It wasn't you. You know, you were close to our dad. And, you know, you're like family to us. But the moment she sort of, he ends up putting her in the will.
When she starts to get agency, then they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. You owe it to us.
Yes. Like, yeah.
All of this privilege comes hopping out of every single one of these characters.
Yeah.
About what they feel owed, because when the little alt-right troll son calls her anchor baby.
Yeah. one of my white starlets, Ricky Lindholm, is racist in this. I was like, oh my God, I don't believe.
It jumps out of them. Like you do what's right for the family, and they try to like talk about turning in her mother. Her citizenship is on. If you know, there could be a problem that you know. I like that conversation she has with him. She's like, he's like, you know, we have the resources to help you. She's like, oh, so I have the same resources, so I don't really need you. Like,
yeah,
I'll use my resources that I have to do that, to get all the right lawyers and take care of it.
Right.
But that's, you know, it speaks to that privilege and like this idea of what you're owed as a person.
Yeah. I think they do a great job in both of them, even though like this one is, I guess you would say like this is a little more realistic or grounded because of her ethnicity, and which they don't always get. They say she's from Ecuador or Uruguay, or
they keep fucking it up,
and those are some of the funniest moments. And
they don't really know about her
because they don't care. Yeah,
they say they do, but they don't care. She's just a help.
Yeah,
and they start treating her like the help. But the moment she has some agency, she's back to being the help again.
Right. Yeah, that's I just. Nobody has picked this up. And if I was a internet guy, I would have written some think pieces on this one.
Some YouTube video, you know, it'll be Nick Cannon or somebody.
it's so funny to me where it's like,
but it's ripe for comedy because of how absurd it is.
Yeah. And isn't even like Terminator Dark Fate was like that too. Like a woman of color being the face of, I guess, of salvation, of saving humanity.
Yeah.
Where they're really trying to drive this home. Because he could have picked somebody else.
Anybody else. And that girl was good in that movie.
Oh, she's fantastic. I mean, are we talking Terminator or are we talking...
Yeah, Terminator.
Yeah, I liked her. I enjoyed it. It was entertaining. Like I saw it. I don't even remember the last Terminator movie I saw, but I just said, you know, it's in Dolby and I got some free time. I'll go check it out. I don't know. It's not that much we could really, I mean, we could delve into Knives Out, but I don't think, I just think,
it's a fun movie. Chris Evans is great in it. Jamie Lee Curtis is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Toni Collette is great.
Yeah.
And the family has a bunch of mess going on, and it all sort of comes out as after the father's dead. And he knew they were all about the mess.
Yeah, he knew they was on some bullshit.
And none of them deserved any of his money.
No, they didn't.
None of them did.
No, they didn't. They
were just a bunch of privileged pricks. But yeah, it's funny. And I forgot Lakeith Stanfield's in it. And he's good.
Yeah,
he's just trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah, he kind of had a moment that I was surprised that I laughed at, like when he was like, "Damn," or, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, I was like, "Okay," I was like, "Oh yeah," you know, the black guy saying in that moment, you know, it was I appreciated it. I enjoyed it. I really like Rian Johnson, man. I liked Brick. I liked I really liked the Brothers Looper. Bloom. Looper was good. He's a guy that can. That knows how to shift, go between many different genres of film and have a really interesting story.
Yeah, it's an interesting take. It reminds me of like the 80s Clue movie, but not as campy.
Right.
And it's got some twists and turns in it and some, you know, some reveals that aren't super like gotcha moments.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, oh, okay, this all makes sense. I was seeing it one way without this information. Now that I have the information, this is what, when they replay the scene, like, oh, this is what this person was saying. This is what they meant. And it's like, it's refreshing and fun.
Yeah.
And like, they got a bunch of like running jokes, like the mom who can't really speak, the old grandma who doesn't really speak is funny.
Mm-hmm.
That stupid accent that Daniel Craig keeps doing is hilarious.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of, you know, how smug and ridiculous Chris Evans is even funnier.
Yeah, and once I mean, I don't really, it's kind of, Waves and Knives Out are two different movies where it's like,
yeah,
I don't really want to take away people's experience, even though we spoiled the fuck out of Waves, but we get a better conversation.
Yeah, Waves is meant for a conversation.
Yeah, this one is like plus so plot driven that it's like, you and I can talk about it off mic, but like, it's like, you go see it. It's fun.
Yeah.
You know,
go see it. It's fun.
You know,
you'll walk out of there having had a good time in the theater.
Yeah. It was so much fun. Like everybody seemed to enjoy. And what they did with this one, they gave everybody a poster and Rian Johnson comes on before the movie starts and says, everybody was given a poster And if you have a sticker on the back, you get a little prize after the movie. I didn't get anything. I didn't take a poster. I didn't know. I was just like, I don't want to.
You know, there's a prize associated with the poster.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. But it was pretty neat. Somebody won something. Probably a sticker or some bullshit.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to ask you before we wrap up. So we both like Knives Out. We love Waves. We kind of touched on something in our conversation about Knives Out that I wanted to get your thoughts on. It reminded me that I wanted to ask you about this. What did you think about the failure of box office failure of Terminator Dark Fate and of Charlie's Angels? Is this just Is this just outdated IP that people are trying to like siphon money from?
You know what was outdated IP? Jurassic Park, but Jurassic World made all the money. It was a fun movie.
You know what I mean?
It's every year there are four or five movies that on paper you feel like should work.
Yeah.
And they don't work. And it might be due to timing when the film's coming out. It might be people just exhaustion. It might be something unrelated to movies, right? Any other form of entertainment that's out right now.
Yeah.
That's got people's attention that people don't feel like stepping out of the theater and going to see your movie.
Right.
The problem with Charlie's Angels marketing is it's apparently really a comedy, and none of the trailers really lean into that.
Mm.
It looks like an action movie, but the action isn't enough to like, you know, like, whoa, I can't believe it had, you know, these people do that. They didn't, you know, no. No, it's not. The action is enough to grab you where you can't believe you're watching something on screen.
Yeah.
It's not like you're watching a Mission Impossible trailer, but they don't lean into the comedy, so you're stuck with a movie in the marketing that looks like a mediocre action film.
Yeah.
With some pretty faces. And that's just not enough to get some people to the theater.
Yeah. And then Elizabeth Banks was like, well, y'all, the superhero movies. Like,
yeah. Come on.
It's like, damn, girl.
That's not it. Captain Marvel's superhero movie. People went and saw it.
Like, yeah.
People just didn't go see your movie. And it's really sometimes nothing more to it other than people just weren't moved to go see your product.
Yeah.
It's not like you ask people to come see it for free and everyone, no one showed up. You ask people to pay money to see something.
Yeah.
It's getting like decent reviews, but no one's, it's not in a film conversation.
Like, yeah.
It's a movie that I would have definitely dropped in like a January or February when there's nothing else out. It's the holiday season's over. People are still looking for stuff to do. They've got some extra money left over from the people have gotten gift cards for Christmas for movies.
Right.
And they can just say, I got a gift card to let me go check out Charlie's Angels.
Right.
Let me go watch, you know, Terminator. But they don't. And that's not no fault of Elizabeth Banks. I think if you're Paramount Pictures or Sony Pictures or whatever, you've got a schedule of movies and you've got to somehow figure out how you're going to fit this movie into the rest of your movies on the schedule.
Right.
You've got dedicated marketing and time to these movies that you know are going to be looked at for award consideration.
Yeah.
So you pour all that in. So you either dump it early October or you wait till next year.
That makes sense, man.
Yeah. That's it. And so that's your decision and it fails and you're like, oh, well. But it'll get a second life on streaming services. I think in HBO, I think people will watch it and probably enjoy it more than they thought.
Yeah. And little girls will watch it. I mean, all of them are hot. I like those actresses. I like them all.
Yeah.
But
old girl. She's tall. What's her name?
Was one of them in Power Rangers?
Naomi, yeah.
Okay.
Naomi Scott. And she was also in Aladdin. She played Jasmine.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. There's some pretty girls. And, you know, I like action. That week was like last Christmas and that. It was just like, I remember texting you. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just take this week off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to feel compelled to go to leave the house and go see something.
Yeah.
And it just didn't move the needle. I don't like all these conversations of people blaming other things for the reason why your thing isn't popular. Maybe just people just, and it's hard. Some people just didn't like it. Loose is a really good movie. I don't know anyone who saw it in the theater.
It's just me and Randolph. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great movie, but also a movie I think that people will revisit during award season when they start seeing it pop up. Like Loose, I never, even people who I know work in all this critic stuff were like, oh, I never heard of this.
Wow. Jesus.
You see what I'm saying? Like, there's so much content that sometimes things just are off your radar.
Yeah. I was making sure I saw that shit.
Yeah, yeah, me too. But you know what I mean? Like, it's a great movie that just didn't make a bunch of money.
Right.
I don't know how much money Waves is going to make. But I also think A24 is expecting Waves to, like, break the box office. I don't think that's their expectation.
Yeah, they got
to... And I also think Elizabeth Banks' expectation shouldn't have been that for Charlie's Angels. She's expected it to, like, crush it.
Yeah, because what else was out that... What's at the top? Let's see what's on Box Office Mojo. Oh, crap. Box.
Out the same week as what?
Frozen 2. Yeah, you're not going to...
Yeah. Yeah, good luck. Good luck. The one thing we always talk about is with these films is actual physical theater space.
Yeah.
So if you've got a movie that's underperforming, and then you've got Frozen 2 coming out, and then Knives Out coming out, and then that behemoth Star Wars movie, mm-hmm. you're just not going to be in the theaters physically. The physical yeah. like, all right, we got to bump you because we need 8 screens dedicated to Star Wars and Frozen 2 and A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, right? So you got mm-hmm. these big movies. You're just not going to have space.
Yeah.
There's no space for you. There's been plenty of space in January because there's nothing else out.
Frozen 2 delivers $350 million global debut. Well, there you go.
Yeah, not surprised. It's a good movie.
It is good?
It's good. Remember the first one?
I don't really remember the first. I kind of watched the
movie. Neither do I, but I walked into this one and was like, oh.
Okay.
This is why Disney gets all these kids looped in because they figured out the secret sauce of like music and comedy and
yeah.
great animation. It's just long enough. I don't feel like I was there a long time. It's got some fun music, some even better musical numbers that are performed in the film.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like, yep, this is why Disney get there. Yeah, this is Disney. I get it. I get it's a formula that works. It's so funny that everyone's like, oh, everyone knows why this works because of this. I'm like, well, then why doesn't anyone else do this?
Right.
How come they can't do it? How come DreamWorks can't consistently do this? Mm-hmm. Sony Animation can't consistently do this.
Right.
Disney somehow consistently does this thing and it works. And it hats off to them.
Yeah.
Good for them, man.
Yeah.
Good content.
I'm going to see it, I guess, eventually, but there's just so much stuff.
Brown in there doing the voice. And there's a deeper conversation about colonialism mm-hmm. and like culture and, you know, a nice little sort of metaphor for what happened to Native Americans.
Oh, great. Shit. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. So these heavy topics are in here in this kid's movie with a singing snowman and a talking elf reindeer, whatever he is. Yeah.
I got to see 21 Bridges.
I mean, you do, but here's the thing, Chris. Here's the thing.
Okay.
The more interesting story is Taylor Kitsch and Stephen James's characters.
That they're underused?
If the film was focused on them, if that it was their story, and then we were watching sort of, you know, Chadwick or fill in whoever, the cop trying to find them,
mm-hmm.
that's a way more interesting movie. This is... Every time they cut to those two, I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. And then you cut back to Chadwick running from, like, crime scene to crime scene without a Panther suit on. It's just not exciting. It's not exciting. Because they don't give him, and it's no fault of his, they don't give him anything to do other than, like, show up at a crime scene, look around like some Rain Man putting the pieces together, and it's like, let's go to the next crime scene because I got a phone call.
Yeah.
And they go to another crime scene. They're always a step behind. Meanwhile, the more interesting conversation is the how and why with Taylor Kitsch's character and Stephen James. They're much more fascinating.
Well,
not bad, but yeah. I left the movie being like, yeah, that would have been way more interesting to watch.
And you,
these guys.
And I think before I go see my parents, I'm going to see Queen and Slim. And you like that one, right?
I enjoy Queen and Slim a lot.
It's, okay.
Yeah. Again, it's something much like we talked about Endgame, much more of an emotional film than I anticipated.
Okay.
Jodie Turner Smith, is that her name?
The
young woman in the film?
Okay.
A star.
Okay.
Star in the making, a revelation.
I'm excited.
She's got an attitude about her that I recognize. And I appreciate in black women.
Okay.
The attitude that I love. It's not it's not rude, but like you'll see her attitude. Like, oh yeah, I know women.
I know this lady.
Like, I know young women. Yeah, I get it. And it's funny. I listened to Dan Kuhl talk about his character, and he was like, this dude works at Costco and yada yada yada. He says, I was like fleshing out the character. He was like, oh, this dude thinks he's a catch. Like, yeah. He thinks he's a prize for some woman to have. And that comes across in the way Slim is.
Okay.
You know, so you should want to be with me. I'm Slim, you know, but, yeah, but the real breakout star in this is Bokeem Woodbine.
The King, young.
The King got some good scenes, man. He's real good.
Well, it was me
and the other black people in the theater laughing at his scenes.
I mean, he's been doing it for 20 plus years now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not a surprise. I mean, to me, the biggest surprise with him was his turn in Fargo, where he kind of outshined a lot of that cast.
Yeah, he can act.
Yeah.
As my friend Damien would say, his character in Queen of Slim is a championship nigging the entire time.
A championship nigger?
No, championship nigging is what he calls.
Nigging?
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Just acting real niggerish. All right. Movie.
I'm excited. I'm hoping to see it like right after work. If my corporate bosses find a way to let us out early for Thanksgiving,
I'm praying for the same.
Brother. I'll be there. I'll be at the theater checking that out before.
Yeah, I think you'll appreciate it. The soundtrack is great and too great. It's essentially just the two of them holding down the whole film.
Cool.
Solid.
Cool.
Real quick before we leave, did you watch the fight last night?
No, I didn't do. I don't have. I didn't do pay per view. No, you. I saw a picture of what is it? Did he win, DeAndre?
Yeah, he knocked him out with one punch
in the first round.
No, like round seven.
Oh, okay,
but just a devastating right hand to the face.
Wow,
it reminds me. Like, I don't know why people box. It looks so. One of those things where. He didn't fall over, like his knees buckled. He like almost all of his weight landed on his knees.
Jesus.
And he like fell backwards.
Wow.
Yeah, not good. Not good for him.
I want to get back into boxing. I watched that fight, was it about a month ago with the kid? He was dating a trainer's girl. Oh, fucking hell. They were Mexican, and he was black. He's from Newark. What's the guy? Shakur something?
Yeah, I know you're talking about. Yeah,
flyweight kid, and he's dating his opponent's sister, and they don't talk because he's black or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he won the fight. He said, y'all need to talk to y'all's daughter. Mend these fences, man, because worse shit has happened to people for them to not be, you know, for them to not be talking, you know.
Mend the fences, man.
Well, Tim, this has been fucking awesome, man. Thanks for getting me out of my cave and inspiring me to talk to someone and do a podcast, man. This has been great for me, and I hope the listeners enjoy it. They should. Plug some stuff. You're going to be on TV soon, right?
I'm TV on Monday, tomorrow.
Oh, see, there we go. All right.
Talking about fall movies. So I'll be talking about a few of these movies that we discussed. Knives Out, King of Slim, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, a couple other movies I'll discuss. It'll be fun. I'm always weirded out being on TV. I've never actually watched a segment of mine.
I understand that.
You understand? Never watched one. People tell me they're fine. So
you're like, who's that guy? And the guy is you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So yeah, doing that, and you know, a bunch of reviews coming up because of the war season. So
now, what's this channel? Because there's some people in the Pacific Northwest that listen to this.
Yeah,
other than you.
Right, it's just me. Yeah. New Droid Northwest on King 5. So I'll tweet out the
Definitely tweet out the link.
One thing they tell me, can you share it on your social medias when the video comes out? So
yeah,
they'll send it to me and I'll share it. So
yeah, that's dope, man. Hold on to the line, Tim. Thank you so much for doing this, Tim. I will talk to you next time, people. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you. And subscribe and email me and all that good stuff. Rate and review the podcast and make me feel like I'm not just throwing this thing out here into the abyss. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Peace.